Drew and Leslie, get the shit on. Interracial John, shut the fuck up and listen. Interracial John, interracial John, interracial shit motherfuckers, shut up and listen. Drew and Leslie, interracial John.
I got barfed on the sound.
What's going on over there? Okay, welcome to the Interracial Drama Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined as always...
Drew! I hate that guy!
By very white guy.
I'm very white indeed.
You are very white indeed. What's going on, dude?
Just feeling stupid.
Well, that happens to all of us, I guess.
It does.
If you're just joining us for the first time, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W. And you can also go to our website, interracialjohn.com. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Periscope. Again, at Interracial John. We love feedback.
We do.
Mm-hmm. You can leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher, which we love. If it's 5 stars, we'll read it here on the air. You can also email us. interracialjohn@gmail.com. You can pick up your phone, dial 657-JOHNERS, that's 657-JAWNERS. If it's under 3 minutes and not ridiculous, we will play it here on the air. Yeah. Shout out to Rod and Karen from The Black Guy Who Tips for our general feedback rules. Speaking of which, Rod and Karen will be on our show next week. Very exciting. Yeah. Super cool.
Speaking of...
Today we have a guest coming up a little later, so that's very exciting for us.
Yeah, I was trying to step on you, but I said, speaking of feedback reviews... Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah.
Yay!
Laser.
Ain't got shit.
Five stars.
We do have some 5-star reviews.
Yay.
I got 2 of them.
Woo.
One was from Angry Sag.
Ooh.
You don't know what you're missing. Leslie and Drew will make your day. Ooh. Leslie is your anti-Hotep vaccine, black man. I just read it. don't write into Very White Guy, please. I just read it. Drew is a less problematic white dude that shows other white people how to behave. I'll accept that. I resemble that. I like listening to them at work to drown out the tomfoolery that surrounds me. Oh my God, I forgot and remembered how good Leslie did with the Lemonade Review. Go back and listen to it. Thank you, Angry Sag. We appreciate it. And another one from APRYLMC says, helpful and informative. This is such an insightful podcast. From the news to scoring apologies, this podcast never lets me down. I love the baby's voice introducing the news to the very white guy's opinion. Leslie is passionate, intelligent, and funny, and I can't wait to hear her opinions on what is going on in the world. Thank you for being so entertaining, honest, and inspiring.
Oh,
thank you. Shout out to Charlize. We just saw her. Oh, my God. And speaking of the little girl, she's... almost six. She just turned six.
In like 4 days. Yeah.
And it's just like adorably precocious.
She's
at barely six.
She's so smart.
Oh my God. And she had on almost like a, what do you call those onesies that they sold that were really kind of weird that everyone had?
Oh yeah.
Where you'd like wear it while watching the couch.
Yeah. Like a slack. Snuggie or
a snuggie. Yeah, it's kind of like a kid's version of a snuggie, but it's got like.
It's a onesie. It's just a onesie. That's what they call them.
Okay, but it was like a cat suit,
yeah.
Right? Like it looked.
No,
like
it was a onesie, not a cat suit. That's something else.
Oh,
it was
I'm
a
sorry.
Onesie that
you're right.
That That's looked like a cat. So like the hood looked like made you look like a cat.
I forgot cat suit was a thing. So, yeah. But it's a onesie that the hood looks like a cat with like ears and it's got like paws and stuff. And it was pink. So she's running around with pink cat and like pink cat this and pink cat that. Like have like a whole like. I don't know, like a backstory. Pink cat's got superpowers and this and that. And I was like, man, this is really. Imaginative.
Mm.
I guess maybe that's the only child thing. I don't know. But she's adorable. Thank you for liking our niece, Charlize. She's awesome. But yeah. So that was all. I love reviews. We had, there wasn't a whole lot on the ketchup, but the fucking toilet. I don't know if we can put that on the podcast.
Can we put a link
to the picture?
Oh, the ice toilet.
I really like. I don't
thought
know
you were
what...
talking about our toilet because the toilet upstairs broke.
So I want like a picture of our toilet.
Why would anybody care about that? I'm so confused.
No, I'm gonna go to the hardware store and just buy a new fucking plunger and not plunger, a new you know what they call that, the fucking floaty thing. I need to buy a new floaty. But that's we don't need to talk about our toilet on the podcast. I was talking about the frozen ass fucking Pure Michigan toilet.
Yeah, yeah. So we were in Lansing last week and stopped up to get some gas. And Dr. Smooth the Mustache went to go to the bathroom and he comes back to the car and he goes, "You guys got to go take a look at that bathroom." And we were like, "What the fuck are you talking about? Like, we're not going to go take a look at the bathroom." He's like, no, really. You got to go in there." And I was like, "I'm not going in there, but Drew, take your phone and go in there and document whatever needs to be
taken
care of."
Well, you know when like Todd comes and he's like, "Oh, I was going to say, you should do it." Like, wait a second.
And what the are you saying to us?
Like, for real, because Todd's just like, wait a minute. Like, what? So now I have to go look, right? Like, when he's like implying, like, maybe. It was, I guess I'll just describe it. An outdoor bathroom toilet at a gas station. And it's about like minus like one with the like regular temperature.
Yeah, it's fucking freezing.
Wicked cold.
Yeah.
And I don't know if somebody did it as a prank, if somebody was trying to like not let the pipe burst. So they wanted to like prevent the pipe bursting. They were going to like run the water was their thinking, but, it overflowed the sink and froze. And there was like a sink-sicle, like a sink icicle, like a giant, like ice sculpture coming down from the sink onto the ground, which again, it's a bathroom in a gas station, so it's already pretty fucking nasty. And it's got like 6 inches of frozen ice on the bathroom floor, the entire you couldn't walk into it. It had a huge block of ice. It had encompassed the toilet, everything. I had never seen anything like it.
Mm-mm-mm.
I don't know why. Like, maybe you're trying to like the pipe bursting is
I don't think
worse.
It burst, though.
No, it wouldn't, because it was
right.
still running.
Right.
The pipe didn't burst. It was still running. Still running.
But I don't know how that's an answer.
A solution, though, like...
to create an ice ring.
It was like fucking Han Solo in, like, encased in carbonite. Like, yeah. Literally, the whole
the
fucking...
whole
the shitter, everything.
Everything.
It looked like it wouldn't thaw to, like, maybe.
It looked like the day after tomorrow, you know, where... it's like everything just like
is that
covered
the Toby that is Toby
Jake
in that
Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal. Yeah,
yeah. That one. It looked like that.
Yeah, it did. The super fucking like tornado nova thing that freezes everything instantly.
Yeah, yeah. That's it looked like. It's like, wah. Anyways, it was crazy. And
I tweeted it with hashtag Pure Michigan.
Also, we were on HBO last night, which is totally weird.
Very
strange.
It's a little
it's exciting. Well, first of all, let me see. I'm super excited.
Super excited.
I'm happy with the way that the piece turned out. I mean, I wouldn't have done it exactly the way that they did it, but I don't think that anything was misconstrued or misrepresented.
No, and, they used they implied guilty white a little bit too heavily.
Yeah, but that's like a white perspective. So, I mean, I wouldn't have said those things, but I know how I felt about it.
And everything else was accurate. I mean, I think that's part of the success that you and Marissa are as organizers and entrepreneurs and business people. They're just the way that you did things and set it up, and then just the way you responded to Evan, the news, I guess he's the talent. Didn't give a whole lot of, you know what I'm saying?
Like, not a lot of room.
Yeah, like you could have, like there could have been like information, and like I can't even describe like what I'm trying to say, but there's ways that as someone who's on your end, right, who's being interviewed,
right,
you could respond inappropriately, you could give ambiguity. There's all kinds of things that you could do if you don't have clarity and purpose and message and even the business model, right? Like if there isn't clarity in the business model, you can't have clarity in the messaging afterwards, right?
Like, and I think too, it's like we've been very clear, like we're trying, you know, we're trying to be our normal unapologetic selves,
yeah,
because otherwise it can't be
it's not something you want to do.
Right. It just negates the entire like endeavor. So for me, for that, it's like it's very freeing. Usually when I'm doing stuff like not that I'm not unapologetic, but certainly if I'm representing an org or something like that, like I need to be just mindful of those things.
Yeah, you don't necessarily code switch, and maybe you do, I don't know, but like there's definitely a, when you're in the Unitarian Universalist world, there's a, you know, and I'm not saying that you're less radical or this, but there's, you are a certain way than when you're not. And you even have the FAQ that's like, I don't think Marissa and Leslie are very respectable. Like, we're not. You know, so I think having done all that stuff ahead of time really allowed your responses to Evan be pretty spot on and didn't give him a lot of room to do anything. It was good. It worked out really well. I thought it was a great, an accurate piece, if not a fantastic piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was good. It really was. And I think it was good. I'm glad that they did it. And I think it was good for y'all. And
yeah,
hopefully it'll turn into some more exposure to the
I think, you know, for us, it's like exposure, yes. Also, like, credibility. Like, you know, it's nice to have, you go to the website As Seen On, and we have all these, like, really, you know, reputable orgs that are, you know.
Yeah.
You know, just noting what we're doing and reporting about it and showing the importance of it. So that's really exciting. It just gives us, like, people go to the website if they've just heard of it or whatever. It just gives us a lot more credibility.
Did you notice in the, I guess it's like the digital version of a lead, the, like, the snapshot they put on the,
yeah,
the show, like the infographic, yeah, you get, or the info you get about the show, the little, right, like, blurb said, two women. Didn't say two black women, yeah, two women of color, just two women. I thought, I don't know if that was deliberate or purposeful, but
I'm sure it was a bunch of things, including how much space they have to write in that description. But I'm sure also there was lots of other words that could have been eliminated besides black. So it was still a decision. I just want to be clear on that part too.
There was just not enough characters for BLA. Those five right there, black, they take them out. Yeah. But I thought, again, I thought it was done well. And then on the little bonus footage, the, like, what's in the box.
Yeah, it, that's dope as fuck. Man, I'm super excited about
it's
that.
It's like a professionally shot, like,
commercial.
Kind of, yeah.
Not full commercial, but I mean, I got to say in my own words and show the, yeah, products and everything. It was weird seeing the house on TV. So that's strange.
You know, it's really...
It was camera ready. It looks cute.
They only were in the one room.
Right, which is like
good.
The nicest room.
That's good. That was like, we deliberately, like, pulled all the shit out of that room. Like, yeah, take
I was
this
like,
out,
everything in here out. Needs to be gone.
Get rid of this. Get rid
take
of this.
Take it all out of here. All the shit we normally have everywhere. Let's get all of that out. We need it to be sparse.
I thought they did a good job. But it was definitely, because they filmed a lot in New York. Like, Marissa.
They did,
and you
all day.
They,
like,
interviewed her a bunch. None of that made,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so that was like.
A bit of a bummer.
A bummer and sucks because Marissa is so dope and radical and wonderful. So, yeah. But I think, you know, we're both super excited that it was on. And if you go, you can go to HBO Go, HBO On Demand, HBO Now, and watch its Vice News. And it was Friday's episode, so
I
check it out.
I love that Marissa told you she felt like
Mike Wazowski.
Yeah, at the end of Monsters, Inc., when the, like, UPC bar, like, covers him on the cover of the magazine. He's like, we're on the cover of the magazine. I look awesome. He's all excited, even though he's... So, yeah, we love you, Marissa. Sorry, you're Mike Wazowski in the HBO piece.
Yeah.
But it's all good. There'll be others. You'll get your shine.
I will. Hopefully.
No, she will.
No, she definitely will. There's no doubt about it. Because, yeah, she's amazing and, like, literally. The future.
The future. So should we bring Chris on?
Yeah, so this week, Chris from Insanity Checks on. We're super excited. He's been on here a ton. We've been on his shows. And, you know, it's always fun to talk with him. So let's grab him and let's get into it.
Do it.
All right.
And it was, like, the end of the year, so I don't have a lot. I didn't have a real chance to really think it through that much. Like, I literally had you on and was like, okay, we got to do, I got to do something. Cause this is, I couldn't believe the crap that you guys were getting. And it was just making me mad. Like, I was just stewing the entire time. So I didn't think about it. So now I'm looking at it like, okay, I'll try to reach out to these women. I can get them to come, to do small, like, commercials, if you will, or drops for their show. And, you know, it's something like that to kind of, you know, they're better at explaining their product than I would ever be. Mm. So I can get them to do, you know, it's things like that I can try to do, and go from there. So, yeah, I've gotten a lot of people to email me about it. I've been trying to get it out there, and it's just. Oh, I know what I was going to say. I had Joy on from Black Girl Nerds, I think the week after. Was it the week after or week before? And she said something that I was thinking about. It's just, you know, when white people have businesses, nobody looks at it weird when they promote each other, right? Mm. Or you go to listen to a podcast, they all, you know, it's not weird. But somehow when we do that, it's seen as competition. And I think sometimes it's because a lot of times we're in the same space, you know. There's not a lot of spaces for black podcasts, so it's like I think people think there's a competition, and that if I have a podcast over here and I'm talking about nerd stuff, let's say you do too, that we're somehow in competition,
right?
And I think it's because, and part of that it goes back to a white supremacy thing. because we're not given the opportunities to get in front of those larger spaces, we're left to kind of fight over what we feel like is a smaller audience. So right. I just also feel like it doesn't have to be that way. And if we kind of all promote each other, and if I can boost some black women, you know, in their businesses or their podcasts or whatever, I mean, in a small way, it will help me too. But I mean, it's just good for the entire community as well. So,
and you know, yeah. To your point, Chris, about the like white people do it all the time and everybody think it's different or weird. The technical term is hoarding, right? Hoarding opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I've lived in white, you know, wealthy enclaves and communities, and it's not only is it not frowned upon, but like anything you think about, like, oh, I'm doing this thing, somebody knows somebody that can fucking give you a leg up, right? I don't care who or what you're doing. It's like, oh, I'm fucking manufacturing widgets. There's somebody that has a contact in fucking Asia with, you know, manufacturing ties. There's somebody that's got a news fucking contact. There's somebody at the, you know what I mean? Like Mom's Bridge, whatever, knows somebody that's going to get you on the 5 o'clock news with your widget. Like literally, and that's not even a big deal. It just is. It just is.
It's like, it's the nepotism thing. It's like, you know, nobody questions when the white boss, the white guy, brings his kid in and gets him a job, right? It's just, oh, that's what you do, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'll never forget that. I mean, that's what my dad did with me to get me into my field. And it was kind of looked at, it was kind of looked at as like, oh, okay, yeah, you're Willem's son. Oh, okay. It wasn't just like, I don't know. It feels different when black people do it. Like, we're not supposed to do that. Like we've entered into the secret of what white people do. It's like, wait, you guys aren't – like, we're allowed to do that, but you can't. You're not supposed to
– Chris.
Wait a minute. You're not supposed to
– We lived in New Orleans, and there's a stretch of the Mississippi through New Orleans that, like, in order to go through with boats and tankers and all sorts of shit, you had to have a specific captain that knew this stretch of the Mississippi Delta. It was like a law, like a requirement, because there's underwater things, and it can be hazardous and treacherous, and the tide rises and stuff. And there's only like, you know, six of these people that do this. And they had to be on the helm. There's like captain for these like 3 or 4 miles from here to wherever. And I shit you not, it was an entire family. Like uncle, brother, cousin, Ted, Fred, Bob, Jim, everyone, same fucking last name, making like $1 million. Like, because it was nobody else. Like, it was like, in order to be one of these people, you had to know this area of the sea. And to know this area of the sea, what are you going to do? Well, you're going to fucking ride with your dad for fucking 20 years. And then, oh, who's going to get the next fucking assignment? There's only six of these licenses. Oh, I went to Jimbo. Oh, happens to be his son. Whatever. Literally, whole family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Generation, you know, after generation.
And it's seen as, oh, that's okay.
Right.
Yeah, it just is.
That's what we do. That's how we just take care of each other.
It just is. Yeah, it's not even, no one thinks bad of it. It's, oh, yeah, okay, whatever.
It's true. It's very, very true. All right, well, are we ready to get into this fuckery? I think it's time.
It's time for some fuckery.
It's time.
Where's my, I keep losing my thing. Where's my.
Get it together, Drew.
The news is coming on. The news is coming on.
At the top of the docket is Pantsuit Nation.
Ooh.
Whose founder, or whatever you want to call her, group's founder, Libby Chamberlain, 33, who lives in Brooklyn, Maine, is publishing a book based on the Facebook page with Flatiron Books, coming out on May 9th.
Oh, you can buy it now, pre-order on Barnes & Noble.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, Pantsuit Nation began in late October as a secret Facebook group for supporters of HRC and pantsuit enthusiasts. After the election, it became a place for members to commiserate over their shock and disappointment, and now it's going to be a book.
Of what?
So how many? We're calling it a scam, right? I just want to know what the
Chris,
rules.
Listen.
I just want to know what the rules are here, because you know
the same pants. I told Leslie, in a span of like 8 days, they had more press, like the juxtaposition of one event after the other. It's like, oh, safety pin box. No. You can't do that in Pantsuit Nation. You can't do that. We don't want to raise money. It's not commercial. Oh, but buy our goods, t-shirts, and services here. 48 hours later, we're a 501c not for profit. Oh, really, Pantsuit Nation? Okay. A week after that, oh, you can't do any political action and you can't do any activism because we're 501c. And now the book deal. It's like, come on. And y'all are a scam. Mm. Like, this Pantsuit Nation is literally, not only is it a sham, it's exactly like what every white person would do. Like, Leslie and Marissa are talking about safety and boxes. The work that they have to do is, like, to do things differently. To, like, actually run this as a business differently and be different with one another and be deliberate and cognizant and all this sort of shit. Not fucking Libby. Libby's like, ah, trademark it, fucking sell some ads, fucking lock it up with a 501c and a big ass salary, and boom, book deal.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting watching it, and I think for me, like, honestly, I wouldn't even give a shit about any of it. But my problem with Pantsuit Nation is, like, how they treated Marissa and I, and all of the, and how they've been treating so many women of color who have voiced concerns about the, you know, non-inclusive nature of the group itself, the stories that they've been choosing to tell and not tell, and just the centering on whiteness that, you know, is not a surprise, but it's insulting to be told to shut the fuck up when you're like, hey guys, we just want to make sure our stories are told, and it's like, shut up.
And let's call a thing a thing. Libby, like, crowdsourced free fucking labor from, like, people that were, I guess, in mourning and in some secret group to fucking write a book. Mm. Is she paying them people? Are they getting, like, bylines and royalties and shit?
I think beyond that, let's, like, the thing that pisses me off even more when we talk about, like, how the work that is received when white people do things and when black people do things. So Marissa and I created this business. We were met with skepticism, you know, judgment and
derision.
And a general kind of like, well, let's see how they do. This bitch literally just formed a Facebook group. Well, she had to hire a literary agent to help her field inquiries from agents and publishers. This is what I'm talking about when I say, like, literally white people can do the very, very little, like, most mediocre ass shit and get rewarded for it. And we can work our asses off and be derided for the work that we do.
Well, this is what I don't understand. What is the book about?
It's literally
a Facebook group.
It's the stories. Like, it's the stories that people have told
that's
in the group.
My impression, yeah.
Because that's their whole point, is they it's power in storytelling. And so people submit their stories. Not everybody's stories. You submit and then they decide who's gets approved and who's didn't. Because my story about how Marissa and I built, you know, came up with the idea for Safety Pin Box was not accepted by them. Nor was it when Marissa told it. Nor was it when any number of at least 30 people told me that they shared it in the group and none of them got approved.
You know, I literally have a blog and I haven't done anything in over a year called A Million Stories of White Privilege. I think Pantsuit Nation is one. That's definitely one of the stories.
Well, I just think it's like, to me, the whole thing about Pantsuit Nation, the idea of it was that people wanted to support Hillary in secret and then were shocked that she lost. I just want to understand how that fucking works exactly. You literally deliberately are like, we don't want to tell anybody we're voting for this woman. I can't believe nobody voted for her. Like, what the fuck are you talking about right now? And none of it makes any sense. Obviously, people are very upset about it. They feel that, you know, they've been tricked. They joined a secret group and now it's going to be used for a promotion basis and people are feeling very betrayed and blah, blah, blah. You know, it is what it is, whatever.
Well, I don't want. I used to see people talking about Pantsuit, like, so we see a bunch of, you know, women of color talk about how they got added to Pantsuit Nation by accident, and I would just, you know, look at it, you know, and see the. It was kind of like you guys thought, like, I can't believe these stupid people, right? But the more and more I thought about it, I was like, wait, did they really say that they're supporting Hillary? Like, this isn't like Donald Trump. Like, I understand why you got to support Donald Trump quietly, right?
Right.
He's kind of racist. Hillary Clinton, like, what are you supporting her quietly for again?
They're supporting her quietly because 58% of these bitches didn't vote for her. Knew it. They knew that the bitches they sit across from at the coffee clutch and the PTA and yoga class and shopping at Lululemon, they know none of those bitches were voting for Hillary. That's fucking why. And then they feigned like, oh, I don't know. I can't imagine why 58% of white women voted for Hillary. Bitch, you knew that no white women were voting for this woman because you didn't even want to tell people you were voting for her.
Mm-hmm.
All three fucking 0.5 million of you. So it the whole thing is just like a exercise in white feminism and white nonsense, quite frankly.
Do they really have 3.5 million members in that group?
Yeah, I think they had it 1.5 million. People
in
have been
suit fucking nation.
In Pantsuit Nation.
The other two were Donald Trump supporters.
But like, honest to God, like, all it is a name, right? Yep. They didn't have anything else, and they got 5 million people.
Well, they started because they all were so they needed to have the. You haven't been in there. It's really atrocious. I won't read anything, and I got added to it almost immediately, and it was like, this is pure fuckery of these white women trying to, like, say how great they were for, like, giving their gardeners an extra $10, and I wish I was exaggerating. exaggerating, but that's literally the kind of shit that they're sharing in there. And that's the kind of shit they're going to be putting in this book. It's really like some self-congratulatory nonsense. Anyways, I will give a quick follow-up is that Libby responded to her critics on Pantsuit Nation, a follow-up message, she says. I won't read the whole thing. It's extra long and really ridiculous. But I read a few choice things. She says, Pantsuit Nation started with the simplest of premises. Wear a pantsuit on November 8th. Also, celebrate. Lift each other up. Listen. Learn from one another. Share something from your own life that might mean something to someone else across the country. So much has happened since then. So much heartbreak and anger and fear. But my goals for the group remain the same. It's not the place for name-calling, you guys. It's not the place for tearing each other down. It's not the place for divisiveness. She goes on to say that more things make these differences we have make us stronger, more powerful, more important. But if we cannot disagree respectfully or take the time to hear each other out, this intense, loving, beautiful, bright community can't be sustained. Right. She goes on to ask everyone to trust her. But after reading many of your comments, after absorbing as much pain and hurt as I could, you guys, this is the overarching message I would like to offer you. If you trust me, if you trust what I've created here and fostered along with 100 plus volunteers through thousands of hours of work and care and attention, then I ask you to trust me further. I will not let you down. My goal is to do good, a lot of good. She doesn't mention what the good is.
What's the 501 fucking C for? What are they raising? Like a charity, like
she
vaguely
says,
cancer
says that they're
something?
Gonna, she says they're going to use it as a way to, quote, raise money for other like-minded nonprofits.
What the entire fuck?
What is like, that? What
like,
is that? What,
like
what does
Planned
that
Parenthood, ACLU, and Southern Poverty Law Center. Why do you need to become a non-for-profit to give money to non-for-profits? I'm so confused, you guys.
So like a money aggregator? Aren't those like Republican, don't they have people to do that and they're like horrible?
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, she's unshakably committed to contributing meaningfully to the legacy of Secretary Clinton's extraordinary career and historic campaign. And that's what the book is going to do. So.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Whatever, Libby.
Watch,
and then,
it's
of course.
It's going to have a forward from Hillary.
The sad thing was reading the people, all these white women coming with the hashtag I'm with Libby and all of this shit. And literally, I think I took some screenshots of a few of them that word for word said, you know, this is her business and she should run it however she wants. If these bitches don't stop, I can't. So I'm going to just leave that where that is. I don't even know what to say about it. It's such a joke, though. It really is such a joke.
Yeah, please.
Exactly.
Nowhere to go. So BAFTAs, starting in 2019, if your film is not diverse, won't be eligible for a BAFTA award. Yeah, so taking Oscars So White a little bit a step further. In an incredibly bold move, the British Academy of Film and Television Arts announced last week that beginning in 2019, works that do not demonstrate inclusivity in their production practices will no longer be eligible for the Outstanding British Film or Outstanding Debut by a British Writer, Director, or Producer Awards at the annual BAFTAs, often considered the UK equivalent of the Oscars. Eligible projects must showcase this in two of the following ways, as the BBC reported. On-screen characters and themes, senior roles and crew, industry training and career progression, and audience access and appeal to underrepresented audiences. BAFTA will also remove the requirement that newly admitted voters be recommended by two existing members.
Yo, this is some revolutionary ass shit.
Can I just say Reign of April, please?
Let's give her a fucking hand. Let's please clap that out.
Because, I mean, she's been erased. Her contribution has been erased from every fucking article about Oscar So White. And Oscar So White's not even mentioned in here, right? They erased Oscar So White from this, but it doesn't happen without it. It's awesome.
What do you think, Chris? I mean, do you think it's a good approach to trying to, you know, highlight the importance of diversity? Or I love that they included the crew and production and all of that in there.
Yeah, I mean, no, it has to be. I mean, the only way that sometimes it's sad to say this, but that's the only thing that some of these people think about, you know, they only think about the awards. And so if you tell, you know, their whole thing now is, oh, well, you know, we couldn't do it. We had to cast this. So now that makes them think about that. I, I doubt that they'll ever do that here.
Mm.
See, I mean, they won't.
Well, I mean, and that,
no,
and,
it should. Yeah. No, they absolutely should, because most times there's no reason why these films should not be diverse. There's no reason why these films shouldn't get that same why these films need to have all white people in them. There's right. just there's no reason.
There is no reason. And also, like I said, one of the greatest things about Ava DuVernay and Queen Sugar was this inclusive crew, you know, that she put together to do all the jobs and all of the mm-hmm. place, every single, from the gaffer to the hairstylist to the, you know, the cinematographer. Everybody that worked on it was a member of a marginalized community, whether it was a woman or a person of color, all of that. And it just, her point of it wasn't like, oh, she could do it. It was more to be like, y'all claim you can't. And I did an entire season of television with that as a rule. Like, it's yeah. not that hard.
Yeah, well, and that's the other problem too. They always try to make it seem like they can't. Like, well, we would have done it, but we just couldn't find anybody. Well, motherfucker, you're not looking. That's what that was. You weren't
yep.
looking.
Yep.
You weren't looking to do it. If you were looking, then yeah, you would have found them, mm-hmm. but you didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 it's true. I think it's a pretty dope kind of approach to doing it, and just something a little yeah. bit different.
I should say, I stand corrected. They did reference Oscar So White, but obviously not April.
No, which is irritating, but whatever.
You know, and they did do similar. So they here, I guess they did they lowered the barrier of entry to become a voter. So they made moves to make the voting ranks more diverse. That doesn't mean that the films would be more diverse, right?
Right.
You're talking about wait here in
the Oscar Committee, the Academy Awards.
I'm glad that they did that. The problem I have is the problem I have is they make it seem like they lowered their requirements, and it's not really that they lowered their requirement. I mean, they're saying that, but what they really did was they just made it so that people it's like
they just the number of years of experience you had it has. Yeah, that doesn't mean it lowered their requirements.
It reminds me of like affirmative action, where people made it seem like, oh well, affirmative action, you're making lower candidates. No, you're just kind of making it so that you don't stack the deck against black people,
right?
Which is what they were doing before. Right. It's just like, oh well, you need to have this many years, all right, but you didn't let us
listen
be in this. So until, how are we ever going to meet that criteria? You know,
right, just, only right,
shit like that.
Only in the last, I think, like maybe 9 or 10 years, are you able to get the movies at your house on a DVD. Pre-2004, Academy Award voter had to go to the Academy and watch mm-hmm. the screener at the goddamn Academy. Who fucking does that? Like 100-year-old people that are retired and got nothing better to do. So like the system by design was like, it just skewed like really, really old, like mm-hmm. retired people. And finally they're like, okay, you can have DVDs and you can like take it home. You can have other ways to watch it and stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But
and then when you see the list of people who didn't, who were added, you were like, wait a minute, how was that person never on the list to begin with? And so they were like, well, we lowered the requirement so that people could wait. So you mean to tell me this person wasn't in there already? What do you like? How did that happen?
Right.
Oh, that's right. You guys weren't trying to be diverse. You weren't trying to get, and that's what that was like. Yeah. And it's just annoying.
And of course, they did the thing that people say, oh, well, we hired a black person to run everything. That's not the answer either. Let's start there. Like, just because you have a black person that's running an org, when they don't have support in the mm-hmm. ranks and they don't have systemic change, it doesn't really do much.
Well, that's what they also do, too, right? They we fucked up, so we're going to get a black person to handle this.
Exactly.
So, you know,
I just keep coming back to the whole thing with Effie and Matt Damon mm-hmm. in whatever the project.
Diversity
Greenlight.
Happens. Was it behind the film? What'd you say?
He said diversity happens in front of the camera, right. Because he was pushing to have more representation in the actual crew of the film. And it was like, you're telling a black woman how diversity works in Hollywood.
Oh, well,
cool, dude.
Matt is a fucking idiot to begin with.
Facts.
Like, you see the thing with him and what is it, the fucking Great Wall?
Oh God,
this motherfucker. He was like, well, that's not really blackface because it's not really whitewashing. It's whitewashing is when you have a, I'm like, you dumb motherfucker.
He goes,
can you just shut up?
Dude, bro, mansplaining whitewashing.
Right. I'm just like, oh my God, dude, just stop talking. Like, you're making it. Like, I literally will watch him say talk and say this shit and go, yo, Ben Affleck doesn't want to be your friend no more.
That's why. Ben's like, yeah, you're, yeah, no. No, thanks.
Ben's like, I don't
keep thinking, like, his mom's a teacher. Like, she should have.
And at some point, someone's got to be like, you know, Matt, I think you think you're smarter than you are. And you keep, like, the words keep coming out. And it's not helping, you know? So maybe, like, we could do something different. Like, let's try a little differently, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Don't talk.
Well, I saw this come across my purview, which is a new front against domestic abuse, the hairstylist chair. I thought this was freaking ingenious. A new rule taking effect on January 1st recognizes that the unique relationship between hairdressers and their customers may help curb domestic abuse and sexual assault. The amendment to a law that governs the cosmetology industry will require salon workers to take a 1-hour training every 2 years to recognize the signs of abuse and assault, and will provide them with a list of resources to which they can refer their clients for help. Without training, cosmetologists in Illinois they won't be able to renew their licenses, and the professionals covered by the rule, believed to be the first in the nation, include hairstylists, nail technicians, and estheticians. I just think it's such a, to me, it's like a revolutionary approach to trying to curb domestic violence and sexual assault, like going into these relationships that are safer for women generally versus sticking like the state into things, which I think is really difficult to make work for most people. So I'm interested to see how it plays out and all of that. What do you guys think?
I think it's good. Only question I have is the training, is it free?
Yeah, what happens with most of these training things is, like, they have to pay their, like, state fee anyways for the year.
Okay.
This would be the thing that they do when they go to do that renewal process or what have you.
Got you.
With the, like, I don't know if it's an association, however they call it in Chicago. But, yeah, they have to pay, you have to pay dues to keep your, you know, licensure up. And this would be part of that. Hmm. So State Senator Bill Cunningham is one of the chief sponsors. He said for women, those salons are safe spaces where they can sit among other women, drop their guard, and confide about life as their hair is braided or colored or their nails trimmed and painted. So, Chicago says No More is an organization that raises awareness about domestic abuse. And they approached Representative Cunningham last year with the idea of training salon workers. And this is what came about of it. I think it's really neat. And I think it's a good... Again, a different approach to trying to stem these domestic violence issues, which are just...
They should expand it to barbershops.
Yes, they should expand it to barbershops. Very interesting that you mentioned that, because that's really where these fucking conversations need to start happening.
Thinking, here you are, a hairstylist, an esthetician, and you've got multiple training and licenses, but any fucking psycho idiot can be the president, huh? no license right. Needed there, huh?
I know. They're not training him.
No 1 hour.
Spot domestic violence for sure. Definitely not. This next one, I think Chris, you might know a little bit about.
Yeah, is there an audio on this? But I'm gonna see if there's an audio. I'm gonna see if it does. It'll play a fucking ad. First,
I don't think there's audio. But maybe there is. I don't know.
Let me see what happens.
You can check it out. Anyways,
that's an ad. You son of a bitch.
Just mute it.
Skip Bayless caught using a fake account to praise himself on Facebook Live.
Skip Bayless' new Fox Sports 1 show, Undisputed, isn't drumming up the kind of interest that FS1 thought it would when the show first debuted back in September. Sports Illustrated writer Richard Deitch, who is not a fan of Skip or the work he has done on ESPN First Take or Undisputed, has used Twitter over the last month to illustrate how poorly the show is doing in the ratings. As he has pointed out, shows like Scooby-Doo and Bubble Guppies have consistently destroyed Undisputed in the same time slot.
Shame.
But it doesn't look like the show's struggles have slowed Skip down at all. If anything, they've forced him to go even harder when it comes to promoting his work and using social media to try and attract attention. But on Sunday night, he attracted the wrong kind of attention. During the Buccaneers-Cowboys game, Skip used Facebook Live to talk about his beloved Dallas team, and at one point, it earned him a compliment from a, quote, fan who left Skip a message to tell him just how much he enjoys Skip and his new show. Just one problem, though. The fan wasn't actually a fan at all. Instead, it was Skip, or someone on Skip's social media team, attempting to use a fake Facebook account to leave a compliment. But it looks like Skip forgot to switch accounts before praising himself and ended up offering a compliment for himself as himself. The plan obviously backfired, and it didn't take long for someone to expose Skip. Ollie Connolly, a football analyst for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, took a screen grab of Skip complimenting himself and put it out on Twitter. Mm-hmm. It was eventually retweeted about 10,000 times. And while some people did initially suspect that it might be fake, Dylan Gooden, the Facebook user who left a comment right underneath Skip on Facebook Live, later took to Twitter to confirm that it is, in fact, real. As you would probably expect, Twitter is letting Skip have it as a result of a stunt he tried to pull. He spent most of last night tweeting about the Cowboys, and just about everyone who responded to his tweets hit him with the same exact response. Skip, you are the man. Love the new show on FS1. Skip, you are the man. Love the new show on FS1. Skip, you are the man. Love the new show on FS1. There's another layer to all of this, too. One of the reasons people initially thought the screen grab of Skip's comment might be fake is that it showed that Skip's Facebook Live video had received 1.4 thousand likes, and 1.4 is the number that people frequently tweet at Skip ever since Jalen Rose exposed Skip for scoring just 1.4 points a game as a high school basketball player. That's why those people who aren't tweeting Skip, you're the man at Skip Today are instead bombarding him with 1.4 tweets. How about that 1.4? How about that 1.4? How about that 1.4? Skip and FS1 are yet to respond to the reports about the Facebook Live comment that was left on Sunday night. But they say all press is good press, right? And as of right now, Undisputed could probably use all of the press it can get. Complex News, I'm Speedy Morning, and it's always been...
Yo, that Undisputed show had 99,000 viewers. Scooby-Doo had 900,000.
And I was going to say, don't sleep on bubble guppies. Just saying. Anyways, this is hilarious. I know you love Skip, Chris. So I thought this would be a good one.
The funny thing about him is, like, he was actually pretty decent, I believe, during the whole Kaepernick thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he's terrible. Like, everybody was just like, wow, when Skip can get it. But that's like the only thing he could get right, yo. It's just, yeah.
And even him getting it was like such rudimentary concept. I was like, hooray, you're not an asshole. Like, these right. White folks really, really want like serious pats on the back for just being a decent fucking human being. And it's so right. Old. It's like,
I put mommy, wow, I'm a big boy now. Oh, You can put your pull ups on and not shit yourself. Oh. You're a decent human being now. That's really what they are. I mean, it's amazing. You know, going back to the Pantsuit Nation, people was like, oh wow, yeah. You know, I didn't vote for the racist neo Nazi. It's like, well, you shouldn't have, you dumb motherfucker. Fuck.
And you should have been pretty public about it versus secretive in this group right here.
Like, so you mean to tell me the people that were voting for Trump are more vocal than you were? They're voting for something? I can't get it. Honestly,
none of it makes any sense. They've been fucking up since Jump Street. It's kind of ridiculous. I did want to do a quick... Are you going to do this update, Drew?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
We talked a lot about... We had an actual, like... entire review show about Robert Durst and the Jinx on HBO, 6-part documentary.
Did you see that, Chris? I don't know if you watched it or not.
I never did, but I didn't, but I know you guys talked about it so much that I felt like I didn't need to.
Yeah,
y'all were all into that.
Oh my God.
It was you guys covered it enough that I was like,
we really did. We did a whole episode just about it.
If there was a 6-hour documentary, we probably podcasted like 9 hours about it. Like, I'm not even kidding. Yeah. Right. But so, spoiler alert, if you hadn't seen the Jinx, skip 10 minutes ahead now, but we're going to talk about it. At the very end, the last fucking bit on the show, he's like mic'd, and he did this twice, where he was mic'd up and he forgot he had the mic on, and then he would walk out and go to the bathroom and say some like fucked up shit, and they're like, Durst, you just said some fucked up shit. Like, what's going on? Like, you just got crazy. So at the very last one, they were like, the film crew that's doing the documentary, like, they kind of like, they find some evidence that's basically like, ooh, this is kind of like, you know, it's damning. It's not just bad. It's
it was like gotcha evidence. It was like, we got him. Like, this is concrete. This is something nobody had found before. And then following him led them to it. So
what just happened to my audio just went out.
Oh, did it?
Yeah. All right. So anyway, so he's mic'd up and he's at the end of the show and they've got this gotcha kind of evidence. And he's like, like literally like on the camera, like, so he goes, I gotta go to the bathroom. I gotta go to the bathroom. He's in the bathroom, mic'd up. Cameras aren't there. So all they have is the audio and he's talking to himself. What's wrong with you, man? What are you doing? You're messing up. What's with the burping? Oh, man, what's going on? What are you doing? He's onto us, man. And he literally says under his breath, he's like, what did you do? What did you do? And then his own response to that question,
killed them all, of course.
Literally, dude. Like, confessed on the show, like, killed them all, of course.
So now, mind, this is another, like, just rich white people getting to do whatever the fuck. This dude's killed three people now that people, one of which they actually, he admitted to killing
the person. He went to court for dismembering a dude. Yes. And, in court, like, he's on the stand. Only a white person could do this. Literally, like, only the, like.
Why did you dismember him? How else was I going to get him out of the apartment?
I mean, like, he said it incredulously. Like, so you decapitated him? Well, how else was I going to get him out of the apartment? You decapitated your neighbor and cut him up into little pieces. Well, of course I did. How? I couldn't carry him. He was a big man. Like, literally, that's like, oh, I didn't know I couldn't do that, you know?
And so the update, though.
Update is,
this new evidence that came out of the show, he got arrested and is going on trial for this third murder that he committed.
Apparently he was on meth. I was on meth the whole time. Should have been obvious, Durst said, according to the transcript. But good Lord. I feel like a little bit of this is just
notice,
like,
me, senpai. Notice me.
You know what I mean? Like, even the jinx, like, it was a little bit like it came about because Jaramush did a fictional movie about Durst's life.
Yeah.
And Durst didn't.
Actually, it was about the first person he allegedly killed. His wife, his ex-wife, or whatever.
And Durst didn't like the portrayal.
No, he loved it.
He didn't think it was accurate. He didn't get all the information.
He loved it. He said, "You were the first person to actually capture this and really care about the story, and I'd love to talk with you." And this is what ended up having was this thing. But my favorite thing in this follow up is that he got arrested in New Orleans.
Oh, it's like $100,000.
Yeah, $40,000 in cash, a mask, a revolver, marijuana, all sorts of stuff. And they ask him, like, why didn't you flee prior to the documentary coming out? You knew what you said. He says, inertia, quote, I just didn't really, really, really think that I was going to end up arrested, end quote.
My killed dude. Them all, of course.
Yeah.
He's like, I already killed two people and it went fine, so I figured this time would be fine too. Like,
damn,
what?
It was, man.
He's not wrong. I mean,
no, he's not. I'm not convinced he's going to jail, so let's just say that for real.
I mean,
even
the filming, he was all about, like, his brother, and, like, he was weird. Like,
he was wrong that they pushed him out, and his younger brother was out to get him, and blah, blah, blah. Funny story is that the Durst building is my sister's office building.
I know.
We were watching the doc. I'm like, that's where my sister works. Like, we've been in that lobby a lot. So that's really, it was really funny.
Yeah. No real way to segue into That's my new Lumpotus, Oompa Lumpotus in waiting. But under political pressure, Kuwait cancels a major event at the Four Seasons and switches to Trump's D.C. hotel. Wow, what a shock. The embassy of Kuwait allegedly canceled a contract with the D.C. hotel days after the presidential election, citing political pressure to hold its National Day celebration at the Trump International Hotel instead. Source tells the... and, this is the liberal Think Progress. Forgive me, guys. Source tells Think Progress that the Kuwaiti embassy, which has regularly held the event at the Four Seasons in Georgetown, abruptly canceled its reservation after members of the Trump organization pressured the ambassador to hold the event at the hotel owned by the president-elect. The source, who has direct knowledge of the arrangements between the hotels and the embassy, spoke to Think Progress on the condition of anonymity because the individual is not authorized to speak publicly. They confirmed the account.
Yeah.
Doesn't surprise me at all. He's doing all like this presidency is a cash grab. It's a fucking land grab. He's just every billionaires at every fucking cabinet post. Everything he's done from Jump Street. He's not even president yet. He's not even fucking president yet. And he's calling heads of state and leveraging fucking the president of Argentina to get a hotel done. It's gross.
It is really bad. And just the fact that the thing about this entire election cycle and this presidency and all of it is the GOP, like, they have. We knew they had no morals, but they tried to stand on like they did. And it's just, to me, it's like sweet, sweet wonderfulness that never again will any of them have any leg to stand on about anything, about anybody, any corruption, any claims about anything. Like, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear about Hillary and Haiti. I don't want to hear about the foundation. I don't want to hear about meetings that she had. I don't want to hear about anybody else, anything ever again. Y'all don't get to say shit about nothing again ever.
They will, though. They don't care.
Not to me.
Like, the thing that just makes me so mad is, like, I remember during the campaign, I would tell people that, oh, they would bring up the stuff about Hillary and the foundation and things like that. And I was like, listen, I'm not saying that there aren't things that need to be addressed. But the things you guys are suspecting or are rumored, or you're putting 1 + 1 = 10 to come up with, Trump is actually doing them. You know, like, he actually, like, you want corruption, he is corrupt.
Like, openly. You know?
You want a foundation that doesn't help anybody. His foundation, they still, nobody's been able to show that the Trump Foundation actually gives money to charity and actually does anything.
It paid for one of his, like, a civil lawsuit, right? Like, one of his pageant people sued him, and the foundation paid for that.
Like, there was the whole thing about the pay for play because somebody was able to get maybe possibly a conversation with Hillary Clinton at one point, or to talk about maybe possibly a job. Trump actually, like, the prosecutor of the Trump University case, Trump actually donated to her, I believe, using Trump Foundation. Like, it was, it
and she's
was
now
so
got a cabinet post. She's now like an attorney general and shit.
Yeah, so it's like, and so the shit, and I think she's part of his transition team. Like, it is so fucking blatant. And I go back to people, and I'm like, this is exactly what you guys thought about Hillary Clinton, but couldn't prove. He's literally doing it here in your face. Like, I had this thing today where, you know, Trump did. I don't know if you guys are going to talk about it, but he had the tweet about the nukes, right?
Oh yeah, today. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this guy is so fucking stupid. Like, is making me reconsider my level of stupid when I had George W. Bush is stupid. Like, Trump is making him look like a genius. And I had people go up to me and was like, oh, no, I think what the dude from BSO was like, no, you guys are underestimating. He is smart. I'm like, no, we're lowering the bar, and we're confusing the fact that he won, and we're trying to process it and make it seem like he's smart. Trump is not smart.
You know,
he's a moron.
The problem is that the reinforcement of his behavior is going to be really dangerous. Like, and I agree. He's not smart by any stretch of the means. But the I don't give a fuck, I'm going to say and do whatever I want.
Yeah.
It goddamn worked.
It did.
He's never going to fucking listen to anybody ever again.
I wouldn't either.
And I think that, you know, we confuse, like, people are like, well, maybe he's not smart, but he's manipulative, and he manipulated. I'm like, he didn't even do that, and when you really think about it, and I think this is what scares people. They don't want to admit this because I think it's more scary. It's more scary to understand that Donald Trump has literally no clue and no idea what he's doing. Like, it's like George W. Bush, we thought was stupid, but he had a good heart. There are redeeming qualities, and he knew enough to not 100% be taken advantage of by himself.
Mm.
Donald Trump has no idea what he's doing. Like, this is why he has to have rallies. Like, you would literally watch, like, I don't think people really, because he would say so many crazy things, I don't think people really thought about what Donald Trump did on the campaign. He never at any point did anything that was smart or manipulative. Donald Trump always went off the crowd.
Yep.
Yeah, showmanship.
He went with them. Like, it was always reactionary. The minute he tried to go, oh, wait, maybe that's not smart, and the crowd turned on him, he would immediately go back to whatever made the crowd happy. It's all about his ego. It's not about being – he never manipulated the crowd.
I agree, it's ego, but it's showmanship too. He's an entertainer, right?
Oh, yeah, he is. Oh, yeah, that is. But I don't agree that – I'm gonna take that back. I don't even think that's that. Because look, think about it. What did he really do that was showman-like? Like, ask any other showman out there.
Well, I'll say,
do anything that Trump did.
So I went to a rally, and I'll be dead-assed. It had the pacing and timing of a big comedy show. Like, I swear to God, like, he had bits, and you could see it. Like, I've seen, unfortunately, multiple of his, like, you know, rally stump, mm-hmm. whatever you call it. And there really were, like, there's a bit he does with the cameras and the media, and they won't turn around and show the audience. It was, in my opinion, he was honing it.
Okay.
But for the same thing you said, like, he would listen to that's what a comedian does. A comedian goes to, like, the vaudeville circuit and is like, okay, let me, you know, crack a couple jokes and I'm all right. This didn't work. That did. This played well. Let me amp up that. And by the time he gets to November fucking 9th, he's got it all fucking crafted. And that's, I think, the dangerous part is that it wasn't even like dog whistly. It was like, you know, like overt, like, yo, I'm fucking racist as fuck. I'm starting with Mexicans are rapists, build a wall, and I'm going to go straight to, like, you know, grabbing pussies and everything. And people are like, yeah, okay, vote for him. No big deal.
Yeah, I mean, like, I was telling to people, I'm like, there are people who voted for this man who are now going, but I don't want to lose my Obamacare. But he told you he was going to take it away from you. Well, I didn't believe him. Like, people were like, oh, well, I'm concerned about his ties to Putin. He told you Putin was a good guy. Like, he told you this stuff to your face. You didn't listen. Like, and to me, I wouldn't call that smart. I just think that, I think I put it this way, being the smartest idiot in the room still makes you an idiot. Just that there are a lot of dumbasses around him, namely his supporters, who were so racist and were so self-centered, they couldn't see that they were signing their own doom. I mean, it just, they're fucking lemons. It was just, oh, God.
One
just,
of the things I remember noting was this notion of the first time I saw, like, Trump actually doing a stump speech, because I've been on a no-Trump diet. I intend to keep my, I haven't heard the man's voice since the election, and I don't plan on it.
Yeah.
But I was in an airport traveling. This was during the campaign. It was the first time that I actually was, you know, forced to hear what he was saying. And I remember texting Drew and I said, but this isn't a campaign stop. He's doing a comedy bit, because that's what it felt like. It felt like punchline, punchline, punchline to get the reaction from the audience. Take a beat, wait for the laugh, punchline again. That's how he laid out everything he was doing. I was like, oh, this actually isn't a campaign at all. Like, there was no, we know there was no substance. There was no point. There was no actual information there. But even beyond that, the cadence of it, the back and forth with the audience was very much like not anything I had seen in the political arena in my age. I know that I'm sure we could go back in history and find plenty of like Barker like political figures, but that's what struck me. And he rode that shit all the way, because, you know, people are dumb and they choose their whiteness over everything no matter what. So
you can say a lot of things about Donald Trump. I do think liar, but like on some level his campaign wasn't totally duplicitous. Like, he told you all the horrible shit. Like, he's like, no, I'm not going to release my tax returns. No, I'm not going to distance myself and put my business in a blind trust. I'm not going to do that. Like, he's like, okay. Why are you shocked?
I want to know. There's a couple things I want to know. I want to know what that first State of the Union is like. Again, that's not. He has to now give. He's now giving a speech to a room full of politicians.
I mean,
not to a room. Like, what is that?
What's it going to be at the G12? At the G8? Like, honestly, yeah, where, like, these people have to listen to this fucking douchebag.
Right. When he's no longer. That's why he needs these victory tours now, because he needs them. Like, I'm going to be honest, I don't think he goes to some of these things. I wouldn't be surprised if
he just delegates it. He ain't sleeping in a White House, so.
That's the scary. So that's the thing that, like, when people go, no, he's really smart, I'm like, no. You need to, one, if we're going to combat this whole post-fact, anti-intellectual world we're in now, we have to stop being afraid to call people stupid. You know, like, he's stupid. And we need to address that he's stupid, because so that you can be aware of the real smart people who are around him, who are the real problem. For instance, you know, hey, Steve Bannon is a racist, but that motherfucker's smart. He's right next to Donald Trump.
Yep.
You know, Mike Pence is, a homophobe, but he's right next. Like, I think the worst one, though, Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan, unlike, I don't know his education background, but I've noticed this other thing too about Republican politicians, that most of them are C students. I don't think Paul Ryan is, which makes him scarier, which I believe now shows why he was so so deceptive with his Donald Trump support. And
right.
he was playing the fence and playing it, you know, playing his, those are the people you need to watch, not yep. Trump, because Trump is a clown. He doesn't know what he's doing, and he's an idiot. And because he knows the idiot and he doesn't really want to be president, he's going to delegate to the other people around him who are much scarier, much more manipulative.
Yeah.
Like, at this point, Paul Ryan is looking at having a president who's going to do exactly what he wants because Donald Trump doesn't know any better.
Dude, Newt Gingrich, at like 10 a.m., Donald Trump's not draining the swamp. He said he was going to. This isn't good. At like 6 p.m., I goofed you guys. I made a mistake. And he's going to drain the swamp, and it's going to be great. Alligators, look out. Literally. It's like in a span of like not even 24 hours. I don't know what he's got on Newt. I don't know what pressure he exerted. But you can't – this is literally – it is going to be the George W. Bush – you can't speak bad about the president because we're at a, you know, at war and it's un-American. It's going to be like that on steroids. You really can't breathe bad about him and be in his purview.
Listen, he's already coming after journalists that are writing bad about restaurants he owns. This isn't even about his actual like policies or his behavior as president. So yeah. Let's be real clear about this man's been a bully from Jump Street. Need I mention the name Rosie O'Donnell to anybody to just understand the depths to which this man will go to because he feels personally slighted because like every other one of these douchebag rich white men, somehow he's the victim all the time. Despite owning everything, despite running everything, despite literally winning the highest office in this entire country with no experience whatsoever, but he's the victim.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's no offense, Drew, but that's white men. That's white men's superpower. Yeah.
It's true.
It is. It's just, you know, no matter what, can I make myself the victim? And when you least expect it, they can't. I've never seen a man win the presidency and immediately be this defensive and this. Like, he's still responding on Twitter.
It's like, you won.
They're sore winners. They're literally sore. That dude on that Delta flight's like, Trump. Y'all some Hillary bitches. Like, dude, you won. Like, what do you need, like, the plane full of people to, like, validate you? You fucking won. Like, just be happy. Sit down. Like, what the hell? And I've read a thing that it's not enough that they won. It's that they want everyone to accept their ideology is the truth and be accurate. They don't just want to win. They want to, like, be, you know, vindicated. And Trump winning is part of it, but you saying, like, okay, you're right. Conservatism is right, and billionaire policies is good, and Trump's going to make America great again. Like, that's what they need. They need you to, like, agree to it with them completely, which is just patently absurd.
Yeah,
Trump literally bullies people in the same way. He just makes shit up. It's going to be huge. It's amazing. It's the biggest. It's tremendous. It's number one. I'm going to do it. And like, can you please? I don't want to keep going on because you could go on and fucking on and on and on and on and on and on, and on about this fucking dude. He's going to goddamn do the Celebrity Apprentice in his spare fucking time. Are you fucking kidding me? The amount of fucking flack President Obama got for golfing.
He's just EPing, Drew.
The number of fucking days they scrutinized, like Obama was here or there, vacation, this many days off, that many days off. And this motherfucker's going to run the Celebrity Apprentice. Get the entire fuck. He's not, like you said, he's not even staying in the White House. It's going to cost the city of New York $1 million a day. Taxpayers are going to pay $1 million a day so his fucking ass can. And oh, guess what? Trump Towers just got a new lease. The entire 30 fucking whatever floor. Secret Service. Four years. That's a plum fucking deal.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think people are. And this is why I never played the whole Electoral College. You know, there's still a way not to. I immediately went into, I'm not watching the news no more. I'm not entertaining this bullshit. Because come January 20th, you're going to have to deal with the reality. I went immediately into understanding what happened in 2000. I don't think people are prepared for how incompetent this White House is going to be. Ugh. Especially coming off of one that was, you know, listen, I understand there, you know, no president of the United States is ever going to be perfect. It's just not. The way you have to be in a leader is just not. You can't. We went 8 years without a real scandal with President Obama and his family.
Hey, he wore that tan suit. He wore that tan suit. And yeah, Michelle's arms were bare that one time. And
right.
Malia's skirt was 5 inches above the floor. 5 inches, right. Dude. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, that's the most they have, you know? And we look at, you know, for all the things they were saying about him, the negatives of the press were going, no drama Obama, or I'll never forget
Joe Scarborough and others trying to call him an empty suit because he didn't show up at thing and blah, blah. He did. They're going – it's going to take maybe 6 months for them to realize, like, everybody who didn't get it is going to make them realize just how much they did not appreciate having some – because I don't think – I can't think of a president we had who's ever been as smart as Obama. Mm. Like, think about the credentials that he has. What other president do we have that have we ever had that's been like that, who we know is the smartest person in the fucking room?
You know, I just had the worst thought. His goddamn fucking hair is a national security like issue now.
Mm-hmm.
His hair.
Yeah, I mean
the fucking hair. Like, we're never gonna know. We're never gonna fucking know how bald he really is and what kind of toupee and amalgamation contrivance he has on his head.
It's just the what's going to happen when you have like when you look at the thing that we're going to miss is a lot of times, you know, President Obama was the smartest person in the room, or if he wasn't, he was surrounded by other people who were. So it was a room full of smart people. When you look at who Donald Trump is surrounding himself with, some of them are manipulative smart people, as a handful of them. Most of them are idiots. Like, look at what he did. He's appointing Rick Perry as the energy secretary. Rick Perry, what did he manage? He got a C in like animal arts or some shit like that.
Rick Perry wanted to get rid of the energy department and didn't remember it existed when he wanted to get rid of it.
He's put in charge of more agencies. People that have axes to grind, like literally the head of the EPA is a attorney general from a state that has sued the EPA on the behalf of energy companies to pollute more in their state. that's not the head of the EPA.
Because that's what Donald Trump thinks. This is what people get when they say, we'll just run the country as a business. Businesses don't have your interests at heart.
I mean, that's what happened in Flint. That's the Rick, you know, one tough nerd, right? The businessman's philosophy and the whole what do they call it, Leslie? When you can't emergency management, right? That's all. Oh yeah, you know, your elected officials aren't able to make a decision. We're going to put you in emergency management, right? And now we're going to make the decisions for you. An individual that I'm saying as a business person is the right person, and that's what happened in Flint. And now look at it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like there's no, you're going from having like I didn't know at one point Obama had nominated somebody for the energy secretary who was like a Nobel laureate. We're going from that to fucking Rick Perry. Like this is what we're getting, and it's gonna be a disaster.
And I guarantee you,
I'm comparing it to, like, you know, remember and again. Even George W. Bush didn't do this. Like, I had this conversation with somebody on Twitter. George W. Bush, let's say for Secretary of State, forget politics or whatever, he picked Condoleezza Rice and he had Colin Powell, two supremely qualified people for those roles. Donald Trump picks a guy who's a CEO of Exxon. And people are going, well, he knows foreign policy because he did business with foreign companies. Like, no, that's not how this works. What the Secretary of State does.
Nope.
That you need Condoleezza Rice was a political science. It's like that is because it's diplomacy. It's that kind of stuff. He picks the CEO of Exxon because, well, you've worked with foreign companies. You know business, okay? You know, Rick Perry. He picks Rick Perry. I know why he picked Rick Perry. Pick Rick Perry because, oh, he's from Texas. I even saw a journalist say, oh, Texas has he's from an energy producing state. You know, the DOE oversees, deals with nuclear stuff, nuclear energy and nuclear waste. It has very little to do with oil, all right? It's not oil that's the problem with the DOE. I know, because at one point my first job at Booz Allen was – working with the DOE project, and I was like, wow, you guys deal with a lot of nuclear proliferation stuff here. Oh. Yeah, that's not what they do. Like, he doesn't even know what the positions he's filling are doing.
He doesn't know what his duties are. He has no idea. He has no idea. The fact that he's not even taking seriously the fact that there's a reason the president and the first family are housed in Washington, D.C., the Capitol, and in the White House that is fortified and able to protect them. Like, it's like he doesn't even get the gravity of the situation. So I don't even...
To Chris's point about the brain trust that was the cabinet under President Obama, he endured those appointments that need to go through Senate confirmations, more veto filibusters than had ever happened in the history of presidents before him, right? So the venerable brain trust that PBO brought got vetoed the fuck, like never before seen. This ragtag group of billionaire assholes, misogynist, racist, whatever, you know, all the isms you can lump, they're going to race right through the Senate conference. Whichever ones need, because they don't all, but whichever ones are Senate confirmed, right on through. No problem.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah, they're, I'm looking at it this way. Anybody who he nominates is going through, which is scary, because this first set of group, this first set of people he's named so far is fucking scary. It is like, I don't care what anybody tries to they're all scary. And each one of them is people that look down on the department. Like, I think the education secretary, oh my God, she's fucking horrendous. I've seen enough on her to be like, she does not need to be in charge of anybody.
Betsy DeVos?
She's from our
here. She's from our here. Town that we live in.
Oh God.
Literally.
No.
And this woman is a menace to humanity. I wouldn't even want her in a room with my child, much less in charge of the education that my child would be getting. And I mean that sincerely. Yeah. I'm not even I'm not joking.
They're going to be teaching intelligent design, dude.
Oh, well, she already said that. Yeah. That's the least of it. Honestly, like, that's nothing. That's shit you can combat as a parent. The shit she's really going to do to our education system that parents will have no repercussions for, that's the shit we have to watch out for. You think this prison to school... the school to prison pipeline is running well now? Wait till this bitch gets a hold of it. Watch. Really. It's going to be obscene. Obscene.
Well, let's
see. To me, she's been the scariest appointment.
Let's keep it moving. We got a
We got a whole other thing to talk about.
White people. So sorry. White people. White people.
God damn it.
Fucking white people.
So a little bit of everything. We got quite a few.
Yeah, so apparently Facebook temporarily banned a social justice activist for commenting on racism today.
What? Unbelievable.
Anybody we know?
The temerity.
All right, it was me, you guys. It was me. I admit it. It was me, Leslie Mack. Yeah, so I woke up this morning and went to log on to Facebook like I normally do, checking all the various pages that I run and everything, and I was greeted with a message, popped up right up. This post has been deleted because it violated our standards. We removed this post because it doesn't follow our Facebook community standards. That's what it said.
My goodness, how vitriolic was this post? It must have been horrible.
The post said, and I quote, "White folks, period. When racism happens in public, - your silence is violence, period."
And then what?
That's it.
But where'd you say, like, cracker ass, fucking horrible?
Nope.
Nothing?
That was the whole...
Those two lines, that was it.
That's it.
White people, when you see racism, your silence is violence.
Yeah.
Literally the poster we have hanging on the back of our wall right there that says the same thing?
Pretty much.
That got banned, huh?
Well, the post got removed. Subsequently, right after I kind of received that message, the next one popped up. It says, "I'm temporarily blocked from posting. I'm blocked for 24 hours and you won't be able to post on Facebook until it's finished. Please keep in mind that people who repeatedly post things that aren't allowed may have their accounts permanently disabled."
So the post got taken down and you got put in Facebook jail.
Yeah, and this is the first time I've ever had anything deleted on Facebook. So there's a couple of things that irritate me about the whole situation and scenario. But I want to just mention that, like, this isn't even like a smart, like, way, even if this was all done in the back end of algorithms, this is the first time I've ever had anything deleted on Facebook because it violated anything. So to put a ban on me for a first violation, that doesn't even make sense conceptually, right? But let's go back to the actual post and what really happened. So yesterday, I did make this post. It was in response to two videos that I'm sure most people listening have seen. The one was Adam, what's the guy's name?
Adam
Salah, right? On the Delta flight, where all these white people were just sitting there silent as he was kicked out. Him and his person he was with were kicked off the plane. And the second was the video from Target of this white lady berating these two Latina American women, calling them all sorts of names. Literally horrendous, horrendous act of racism, loud and wrong. And all of these other white people just standing there and listening to this woman say all these things. So I posted that. Hey, guys, when you see this shit happen, you need to say something. Only I said it super nicer than that with no swear words whatsoever, which those of you who know me is a fucking rarity.
Congrats.
Really, it's a rarity.
I'm shocked.
So I posted this. People that follow me were liking it, whatever. Then I saw that Matt McCrory from How to Get Away with Murder shared it. What did I say to you, Drew?
That's going to be a problem.
I literally, as soon as he shared it, I said, this is going to be a problem. But I had stuff to do, so I went back about my business. I checked back a couple hours later, 500 people had shared my post, and I said to Drew again, this is going to be a problem. So I went and peeked at Matt's post just to see what was going on over there, because it was clear that's the only reason why so many people had shared it. And it was literally a river of white tears. River. I'm a racist. This is reverse racism. This is exactly what the problem is. You can't say that about white people. What did I say about white people? I'm just trying to understand really how this two sentence, you know, post could be misconstrued so ridiculous.
It's everything I saw from everyone was the interpretation of white people was me personally, Drew. And then the response was fragility to that, you know, like, you know, hey, Drew, your silence is violence. Well, not all white people. I speak up if I saw something.
For a population that literally spends all of its time generalizing other people.
Oh, yeah.
You can't refer to them as a group.
Because we're exceptional.
They are
individualistic.
They are an exceptional individual.
Y'all are a monolith. Anything you're all guilty of.
Guys, to be fair, radical Islamic terrorism, you know. You know, all Muslims should just talk about that. They got to just know they're the good ones. I mean, how else will we combat radical Islamic terrorism? Fucking asshole.
Really, really ridiculous. So, anyways, that happened. I, you know, couldn't post on Facebook, but I did go to Twitter and I just posted what happened and such and such and such. And, you know, people were talking about it. There's an article in TechCrunch. I spoke with them just about it, generally speaking, in two ways. One, because Facebook ain't shit, and this is ridiculous that I got banned. But two, it's obvious that these assholes on Matt's thread reported the post repeatedly, and that's why it got banned, or why it got taken down, and why I got banned. And I just made a comment to TechCrunch about, you know, it's hard a lot of times when one of your posts goes viral, you know, when a famous person shares it or exposes you to a larger audience, because what happens in those comments then affect the person who posted it originally and not this famous person that posted it. And there's a little bit of, you know, responsibility that we have if you have a large following when you expose people, especially marginalized people, to this kind of vitriol and consequences. And I said, you know, I'm obviously the people who are at fault are Facebook and the assholes that reported my posts, but there's a level of responsibility that Matt has, because had he or had somebody been monitoring that thread, I would have preferred him to see it going left, because it did almost immediately, and just delete it, because it's obvious that people were going to come for me. What do you think about that, Chris? Like, this is concept of, you know, responsibility in sharing content when you see that you're exposing people to things.
Well, that too, I mean, one, definitely delete it, but at the very least, get in there. If you like, were the original comments, were the comments that went less, were they on his?
Yeah, they were on his. Nobody said anything on mine. In fact, I don't think you can, if you're not friends with me, comment on mine.
Right. So in that case, I'm like, well, you posted it, dude, gotta say something. Like, I have no problem doing that. Like, I think there was one time, it's my post. I think I started deleting people's. Like, I started realizing this. I was like, wait, this is my post. I can start deleting. I can delete your comments. So I started deleting comments. You know, when I started getting the racist white folk that show up in those posts, I started deleting them. Like, I did that on the YouTube for the safety pin box.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the racist comments that I got on that, calling me a nigger and everything like that. At one point, I was just like, wait a minute. This is mine.
You delete. Can, yeah, delete, delete, ban, yeah. Delete, delete. Yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
Delete, ban. Like, I feel like you should definitely do that because, like you said, one, it exposes, it's exposing you. So maybe deleting the entire, in his case, deleting the entire share probably would have helped out a little bit. But at the very least, if you don't do that, you got to get down into the weeds and start defending it.
Mm.
Because there's nothing worse than, what's the point of sharing that if you're not going to also then jump out there and be like, oh, no, folks, you're wrong. This is – you need to – like, what's the point of doing that?
Mm.
I don't understand. What's the point of sharing it? You're just signal boosting it and not –
But a lot of it is performative, and that's kind of the thing. I don't want to talk
– Exactly.
Yeah. So that's really what it comes down to. And, like, you know, it's good to have these conversations because I don't think Matt was like, you know – deliberate or was trying to, you know, I think he saw it, he agreed with it and he shared mm-hmm. it. But there's a lot that comes along with that when you have such a big following. You know, I was joking to a bunch of people today. I was like, you know, it's like Spider-Man. When with a big follower count comes great responsibility. I mean, and that's one of the things. You know, a lot more people are going to see it because he decided to share it. You know, he saw it and he made a decision and then there's consequences to that decision.
Yeah. And I'm not going to say that it, like, yeah, I definitely don't think it was deliberate. And, I've learned that lesson in the same way by harming people, by inadvertently, like, oh shit, I there's enough people that follow me that I now have to take the things I do and the things I amplify and how I respond to things a little bit differently. And, you know, I had to learn that, but I learned it at the expense of a couple of people I care about. Like, people I had to DM, like, shit, I am so sorry. I didn't mean to, like, bring the fucking, like, racist fucking trove, you know, Zerg army onto you, you know?
Yeah. Mm. And sometimes you don't think about it, you know.
Yeah.
There are other black people that have larger followings than me. They also I'll start going like, why the fuck am I getting all these racist? I was like, oh, that's why somebody retweeted me. That's where it's coming from. Because what also happened is, and this happened to a lot of black activists, racists will follow you guys just so they can be mad at anything you retweet.
Yep.
So you retweet something, next thing you know, I got some racist white guy mad. I'm like, and what the? So, like, it's just it's a problem. But I think one of the things I've been trying to do is it's the thing that you always hear them saying, and now talking, you know, the government talking about, you know, like security and terrorism. See something, say something.
Yeah.
That's the way I approach it now. With like when I see, people saying problematic things on social media. Like, if you see it, say something. Like, at this point, you can't just be a bystander. You mm-hmm. can't just retweet something and go, you know, I see people do it all the time. Well, I didn't have an opinion on it. I just thought it was interesting. Don't be that coward. don't do that. That to me is a coward move. I mean, if you're not going to defend it, don't share it. If you're not going to take a position, don't share it. If you're gonna take a position and you see somebody else take a wrong position, call it out.
Right.
Like, there's no longer there was the video of I can't remember the football player. It was from like 2 years ago. The video of him knocking out that white girl.
Ray Rice.
No, not Ray Rice. It just happened.
Yeah.
Well, the
incident didn't just happen, but the video just came out. The video just came out. Right? It was Oklahoma.
And one of my frat brothers and I'm this close to unfriending, like, strike two, because strike three and I'm done, right? And he posted a video and he was on that. Well, you know, she did push him, so, and I'm like, are you serious? And I just, I've gotten to the point where I'll see my Facebook friends say things, and I'm like, I can't let that slide. I can't not say anything, or I'll see somebody, one of my Facebook friends who is woke, who say something, and I'll see a dumb comment in their comment, and I'm like, I can't let that slide, right? I can't sit there and just go, oh, well, you know, look, they've got, I just... At this point, I think that it's all of our responsibilities. If we're ever going to, especially in this Donald Trump age, you can't just stay on the sidelines.
No.
You can't just retweet. Obviously, there's the problem of opening up to other people, but you can't just You can't play the background.
Mm. Like, so you mean you can't just make a you can just make a secret Facebook group to talk about these things?
Right.
Schrodinger's racist.
You can't just do that. It won't make it go away. Right. And I think so many people think that, well, if I don't see anything, I'll go. No, at this point, we can't do that anymore. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, I hope that going forward when people see that kind of stuff, especially if you think it's a good – if I'm sharing it, it's because I can either defend it or talk about it.
Right.
You just can't – I don't know.
That's important, I say, for white people. But as a side note, I know this is because white people listen to the show. All you got to do is say, that's not acceptable to me. You don't have to know why. You don't have to explain why. And you can, like, I'm very fortunate. I have a wife that loves me and is caring, and she's black and, very versed and learned and all this stuff. And believe me, I come to her, like, frequently where I'm like, you know, babe, I'm kind of, like, thinking this thing that, I know it's framed by supremacy and it feels fucked up and I don't know why I'm thinking this, but this is what I'm thinking. Like literally, like I can say like this is my indoctrination and white supremacist conditioning is making me think a certain way about something and I don't understand it. Can you help me, walk through that? And like that's really fortunate. That's really fortunate. But, absent that, just be like, that's not acceptable to me. And they, why not? Like, I don't know. It just feels wrong and that's not acceptable. What you said is not acceptable to me. That's all you gotta say.
Mm. I mean, not to mention, again, if this comes back to you sharing it and it's on your page, that's your space. Mm-hmm. Your social media is your space. At the very least, clean up your own section. Like, minimally. White people always ask what can I do? Well, at the very least, you can get your own house in order, right? This is why it drove me so crazy when after the election and you would see things like Katy Perry talking about something, well, I'm still going to go home and have Thanksgiving dinner with my Trump voting family. I'm like, why? Like, how do you expect to move forward in any of this shit if you can't even get your own house in order? Whether that's your own social media page, whether it's your own followers, whether it's your own family, your own friends. If you can't get them in check, what's going to do? I'll put it in this way. Because I've been doing this more because I feel like white women understand this more when you put it in context of sexism. As a man, if I'm dealing with other men, like if I go to that barbershop and it's a bunch of barbershop talk, promoting rape culture and domestic abuse, it's my job to speak up on it or get new barber or find something to change that what's going on there, right? Mm. I can't just sit. What's the point of me sitting there listening to all that stuff going, well, these guys are wrong, but – damn it, he can cut some hair, so I'll just keep coming back to him, keep giving my money to this. Like, there has to be some kind of consequences. If you're not willing to make that change and to stand up for what's right, you're pretty much fucking worthless to the people that you're supposed to be. This is the people you're supposed to be fighting for, Mm-hmm. And I've been using that example and the idea of sexism against all the white women who show up. Well, I know you're saying stop white people 2020, but I didn't vote. Not me. I didn't. I'm like, so would you feel the same way if when you say when guys come in saying not all men? Do you feel that way then? Do you say that? Well, no. Okay, I got it now. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, what it is. It's the same concept here.
I can't stand that not all white people response. And I'm not lumping myself into any of these groups or categories, but you said if you can't get your followers and your own media account and check, like, I know fully, like, 10% of very white guys' followers are racist as fuck. I don't really block people. Like, I know I've got a shitload of racist followers.
Though, but that's the thing. You challenge them.
Oh, no. As soon as they show their face, I'm like, you're an idiot. I'm going to fucking force unfollow him. You too. You're stupid. You should have fucking – I know you're there. You should have kept quiet. You dummy.
Right. I mean, like, but people who – they at least know – that's not a safe place. Like, your mentions are not a safe space for racists, right?
No. In fact,
you can be there. They can follow you. I can't stop you from following you. But I'm not going to let that shit slide. The same thing with, hey, look, I can't stop. There's some black hoteps that follow me who like Tariq Nasheed. Hey, they'll follow. But the minute that they expose themselves, I'm going in on them, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. That's
how it is. Like, but what happens so many times I see is – people are afraid of what the consequences of that will be. They're afraid of losing followers, or they're afraid of alienating those people or things like that. So they won't do it. And at this point, I think that that's – we've been giving those kind of people a pass. The people that will, you know, allow the covert white supremacy or the covert sexism or whatever slide – because they don't want to alienate anybody, right?
Mm.
It can't, we can't do that anymore. It doesn't work anymore. We've let that go on for too long, and it's now time to take that next step, which is, hey, you're just as bad as the people that you swear you don't like, because you're letting them live, you're letting them chill. How can I sit down and break bread with somebody who thinks that Bill Cosby isn't a rapist? Or that Ray, you know, Ray Rice's girlfriend. Well, you know, she put her hands on him too, so they were fighting. That's just what it goes. How can I can't. What am I supposed to do with that kind of person?
Right.
You know, and I think that's how. When it comes to any of these things, and understanding your privilege and being an ally, that at some point you got to take that next step. I've had to unfollow Chapter Brothers. I've had to unfollow Frat Brothers on Facebook because I'm like, yo, I cannot respect what you're saying. And that shit is dangerous. And I've outgrown you. I've outgrown this. And people were like, we're just going to, like, I was going in on people on this video. They were like, so we just can't have a difference of opinion? I'm like, no, we can't. This is not a difference of opinion here. You know, I was comparing it to, hey, you guys are sounding like white people when they excuse, you're saying, well, she pushed him. I'm like, hey, well, you know, black guy shouldn't have stole some cigars.
Mm.
Right? Oh, no, it's different. I'm like, no, it's not different.
Not at all.
It's the same logic. You find some excuse to make that person, the victim, not clean enough so that it excuses the overreaction and the consequence that comes with that. You know, I had this comment on my page yesterday. I was talking about how I was like, you know, we as black men definitely have this problem because we do this all the time. I'm like, at some point we need to realize that, you know, our liberation isn't just for us. It doesn't mean that we get to hold down another group and get the same privilege that white men have.
Right.
You know, it's about equality for all. And that means, you know, all. You know, I think so many groups, so many marginalized groups are only looking to get to the point where they can step on somebody else's neck like white people do.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
Mm. Well, we did. That was sort of sorry.
Well, no, hold on. We're not done because we didn't actually read the apology. So we have to create it.
Facebook gave you an apology? Oh,
well, this is what they sent to me.
Do tell.
7 hours into my banning, they sent... A member of our team accidentally removed something you posted on Facebook. This was a mistake, and we sincerely apologize for this error. We've since restored the content, and you should now be able to see it. That's it.
I guess there's technically the sincerely apologize.
Here's
the
problem.
Error.
They didn't apologize for banning me for 24 hours.
No. They apologized
so fuck
for
their
making
apology.
A mistake.
They apologized for taking down the post. That's what that apology was for, was that we put your shit back up. It didn't apologize for unnecessarily banning me. Because the thing is, they could have just taken on the post and I could have just responded and disputed. I wouldn't have even said anything about it. But my banning is what threw me over the edge and why I needed to talk about it, because it was so egregious.
But I got a question.
Go ahead.
But I thought it was an algorithm.
I thought so too. Apparently there's an actual human being that was being an asshole to me.
So I've seen a show on this. They actually have, they employ thousands of people, and there are algorithms, and it triggers, and then it goes to another level, and there's a person, and they have to make a decision within, you know, a very short period of time. They have less than a minute to look at any one post. And like, again, they've got thousands of people looking at a million posts over a period of time across multiple things, YouTube, all kinds of horseshit. They got a vet, right? There's just a level they have to do that. It's interesting.
They don't
actually
own YouTube. Why would they have to be looking at YouTube?
Google does this. All companies use this same sort of process, right? And Twitter went the exact opposite. They did not want to have a human They didn't want to have to get to the point where they had to employ people to do sort of like, you know, monitoring of stuff. So they said, look, it's going to be totally open. Doesn't matter, you know, all the whatever fuckery. But so Facebook, all these groups, they've got thousands of people they employ that look at all these things, and they've got a minute to make a snap decision. And to have made the decision that your post was racist is astronomically unbelievable. Like, either they don't have English speaking individuals, they're not employing people that understand the written word, or they've got sensitive white, you know, people that are like, oh, that's racist.
Here's the real thing for me. I actually don't give a fuck how they do it, to be perfectly honest. I don't care if it's an algorithm. I don't care if it's a person. I don't care if it's people on Mars. I really don't care. The point is, they need to get it right. They're a fucking business, and they should be doing that. They should be conducting themselves as a good business. That's the point. I don't want to tell people how to run their business. It's not my, it doesn't have anything to do with me. But as a consumer of that business, I should be able to demand that I'm treated fairly. And that's really that's the point. This bullshit ass apology gets like a zero from me. I don't know how you guys are grading it, but on a scale of 1 to 10, as we do, 0 to 10. No. Really.
Yeah, it's like a negative one. They didn't even give it. It's not an apology.
Nope.
I mean, it's a form letter.
Yeah. It's a standard one. And actually quite a few people reached out to me, including BLM Minneapolis. Their page had gotten taken down and they got the same form letter. So it's super standard. When they ban black people for nothing, this is the letter that they get. It was an error.
Not only that, but like when they say, well, it was an accident, I'm like, no, maybe the person you have doing this is racist, because I've been seeing there's a lot of black people that end up getting their posts accidentally deleted that aren't racist, but will definitely add to the white tears. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Y'all, I have put in the like raise a problem with this post, like, you know, I forget what the language they use is, but like submit a complaint about this post to the most awful, racist, hate filled, like literally like the worst of the fucking worst, and like, yeah, no, but, you know, we haven't, no problem, hasn't been deemed a problem with our guidelines. I swear mm-hmm. to God, not even kidding.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, but all of a sudden somehow this whole accidentally thing, no, it's white people in their feelings.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. It's totally white people in their feelings, and with no, like, I don't know,
it's reverse racism.
Yeah, it's reverse racism. Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
Probably one of the people that said it was reverse racism, and probably one of the people that also, let me stop.
Yeah.
Don't go down that rabbit hole.
Let's not.
Yeah, I'm just going to
You know that we're skipping this one, and I'll say we're skipping it because they deleted their entire account. And it was
a group. It's my fault, so I said ask them.
It was called Hood Rat Thing, and they were from Indonesia.
Did you see this last week, Chris?
No.
They got a lot of flack for naming themselves Hood Rat.
And, not just naming themselves Hood Rat, but like their whole like about page was like, we embody the hip hop lifestyle. And it was like these two white girls. It was really ridiculous.
Yeah,
it was and obscene. So they put some bullshit ass explanation and like apology. Like, we apologize to whoever we offended. Blah, 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 blah.
The last thing we want to do is create division.
Right. So I quote tweeted, I go, so when are you deleting your entire platform?
And then they have.
And then they did.
Hilarious.
Bye, Hood Rats, whatever you are. You're stupid. We do have another white people. That's a funny one, so let's get to that.
Yeah, this... wow. I'm just going to let it play, because this is too goddamn much. I'm sure you saw this, Chris.
Yeah.
Sit down, nigga.
Keyshawn.
I got to go back to the beginning.
And what did he say specifically to you?
Sit down, nigga.
Keyshawn Chambers is a freshman at Valley High School, a Boy Scout, a football player, a member of the ROTC.
Pause it right there for a second, because I love that they gave this black kid like the biggest pedigree.
Member of the ROTC.
They were like, he's in ROTC, he a Eagle Scout, he be taking old ladies' dinners in the evenings. Like, they really went all the way. Go ahead.
He was hanging around his teacher's classroom door in December. The teacher told him to sit down, and the teacher says that Keyshawn used the N-word first.
And I just kind of was stunned a second. Well, then get away from the door, nigga.
This white-ass high school teacher just drop the
Chris,
N bomb so
on.
Hard.
Chris, you haven't heard this yet? Let me just really. Shit.
Fuck, dude. Fuck? He's literally not just like a white dude. Like, I'm talking like 70s ass. Like,
he looks like
hair,
Mr.
Mustard.
Farley from Three's Company.
He's got on a cable knit sweater and a fucking like. And he hit. He said the N with the A, right? He didn't go hard R. He got soft A. But he put such emphasis on it. He stood out of his chair. He's right. Like.
Keep it rolling. It's getting so much.
I repeated the same insult because that's sort of what I've been trained to do.
The school district says that is not what they trained English teachers
to do. They fucking were quick to fucking turn from that, dude. Hung his shit out to dry. They said that is not what they're trained to do. Oh, no.
What happened?
Oh, no.
What?
It said the media couldn't be played.
Oh, no. You were just playing it.
I know.
Oh, no.
I'm going to refresh the page.
Okay,
maybe
refresh,
my flash
maybe it just crashed or something.
Sit down, nigga.
Clearly, that's
the
name
door.
Of the
nigga.
Episode.
And I repeated the same insult because that's sort of what I've been trained to do.
The school district says that is not what they trained English teacher Paul Dawson to do.
He tried to say I said it. And for some, and I didn't say it, and no one else in the class knows that I said it, because I didn't.
Documents from the school investigation show that several of the students interviewed from Valley did not hear Keyshawn say the N-word first. Dawson says that students use the slang version of the N-word at Valley High School all the time.
Okay, my man's got one piece of paper that says two completely different words, and then on the other one, in red ink, he's got the N-word with the E-R, and in black ink, he's got it with the A. I'm not even kidding. My man wrote visual aids and descriptions and literally is holding them up to the camera. Like, wow.
He says N-I-G-G-E-R is a racial slur, but says that students use N-I-G-G-A as often as they'd say dude or hey man. And Dawson says as much as he does not like the word, he still used the slang version to feel more comfortable with black students.
Why is this word used so frequently? So I just don't understand it. And I'm trying to understand it. I need help. Yes, I use nigga. I've used it. I admit it. I put the
no,
H
you
on
haven't,
to emphasize it.
Oh,
nigga. But, you know, nigga this. Nigga, please. Nigga. You know, can you lend a nigga a pencil?
What kind of example are you setting for your
Wait,
students?
Wait, I gotta hit that again. Wait a minute. This dude's too much.
I admit it. I put the H on it to emphasize it's nigga. But, you know, nigga this. Nigga, please. Nigga. You know, can you lend a nigga a pencil?
What kind of example are you setting for your students if you use a word that you don't want them to use?
Upon reflection, that's not good.
Dawson was suspended for 10 days without pay from January 9th to January 23rd, and he has to go to diversity training. He says that he's learned from this experience and hopes that others think twice before using the N-word.
I will never say any form.
So, upon reflection, what, in the last 12 seconds since I
said
doing this?
You just said it like 20 times.
But while it's still...
You just did it in the interview. What are you talking about?
Nigga.
While it's still fresh, hold on. We can all discuss in a moment. This was apparently spoofed by Boondocks.
The stand is that if it's so offensive to them, then why do they say it over and over again?
So Riley said the N-word before you did that morning.
He says it every morning. He calls me nigga. He calls the other kids nigga. He calls himself nigga all the time. Nigga this, nigga that. Nigga please. Bitch nigga. Nigga, have you lost your mind? Nigga, check that hoe. Nigga, you bullshitting. Break yourself, nigga. He says it so much, I don't even notice it anymore. Last week in lunch, Riley says to a classmate, can a nigga borrow a french fry? And my first thought wasn't, oh my god, he said the word, the N-word. It was, now how is a nigga gonna borrow a fry? Nigga, is you gonna give it back? My inside voice didn't talk like that before he got in my class.
Stop it. Just stop it. What are you saying? You call this episode? I don't think we can call it that.
I don't know. Anyways, that dude, mess. Nigga.
I put the H on for emphasis.
Put the H on.
Oh, Jesus H.
That's terrible.
It's really bad. I literally watched it so many times. I couldn't stop. It was just too much.
No words.
It was way too much.
He just kept going deep. He just dug that hole deeper. He wrote a fucking like an aid, dude. Like he held up like an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. You should really
watch
it.
We'll have the show notes. Everybody should actually watch it because he wrote on a piece of paper nigger with an R and nigga without. On top of one another, and was like pointing to it as he was explaining.
It's a different word.
He's like, I say it with the A. I even put the H on it for emphasis.
the Boondocks guy was hilarious. And my first thought wasn't that he used the word. The first thought was, how are you going to borrow a French fry?
Okay, literally
too goddamn much.
Too much. Honestly, white people, y'all are a mess. Mess.
Did you want to hear that Vice News dude?
No, I hate that dude. I can't with that dude. I'm sorry. No,
that's too much.
A bunch of people were talking about it today. I think Duray was talking about it, and I can't.
If you hadn't seen it, it was a white dude in the UK talking to a person of color on Vice News about racism, and had the most unbelievable cognitive dissonance in real time. It was astounding. Literally astounding. That just like, are you that? Okay, whatever. But I guess we go to movies and TVs.
Yeah, so I read this thing about why Aaliyah's music is not available online. Obviously, we all know the great Aaliyah who died 15 years ago in a plane crash. But it's interesting that none of her late career singles, like Are You That Somebody, and her albums One in a Million and Aaliyah, aren't available for streaming or for sale on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, or any other online music service. So it's pretty interesting. There's a single stubborn man sitting on the catalog that includes almost all of her most famous works, as well as albums from Timbaland and Tony Braxton, and a trove of unreleased original material that's never even been heard before. It's very interesting. So,
who is this man?
Well, her uncle, Barry Hankerson, who was the one who kind of like discovered her and got her all hooked up with everybody. And he's kind of sitting on the stuff, and that's where it is. He's not releasing it, and it's just sitting out there. It's terrible.
Wow.
So I hate that. I think it's terrible. Hey, I love Aaliyah. You know, that's like my era of music. So that's the first thing about it. But it's really kind of nuts that we don't get to hear her stuff online. And it's interesting because we've had other people that have lost their lives, and you know, they get to live on in such large ways through the music still, and sort of robbing people of Aaliyah. So moving on from that, though, have you seen Rogue One, Chris?
Oh, of course. I've seen it twice.
I was going to say, how many times have you seen it yet so far? We're going to definitely see it.
Only twice.
Only two times. Yes. Are you going for a third, or is two enough for this one?
I might. I cannot put it past myself.
And I'll take it, since you saw it twice, you did like it and all of that.
Yes, I did.
Okay. Now, I'm not going to let you make you do a review. Drew, your general opinions about the movie?
Oh, I loved it. I thought they did a unbelievable job of the canon, right? Of like melding in the right amount of things that you're supposed to know from the previous Star Wars movies. And then we came home, I'm sure a lot of people did, and went right to, is it New Hope was the next?
Yeah.
And I mean, straight up, like the last scene of Rogue One, like it fucking like ends like word for word, scene for scene, you walk right into New Hope. You know, like they pick it up right the fuck away. I thought they did stuff really, really well.
Yeah, I thought it was really good, too. And I love that... No, spoiler... Actually, I'm not going to do any spoilers, but I love that, for me, it was like everything we've been wanting in a Star Wars movie that George Lucas could never deliver. Like, story-wise, depth-wise, you know, believability, even though it's a space odyssey, like, all of that, I just thought it was really good because of those things.
Everything George Lucas hasn't had his hand on is good.
Yeah, they really needed to get him out of the paint. Imagine if he had been out of the paint sooner. Imagine how good episode 1, 2, and 3 could have been without him. It's lost. Now he got a black wife, so he's fine. Anyway. We started watching the 100. Have you watched that show at all, Chris? I don't know.
No, but Rod keeps talking about it. Well, that's the show, and I've been meaning to get into it.
Yeah, we're binging it. We're like midway through, like, almost done with season two. And
I think we just finished season
two. I went kind of back and forth for a little bit. I was like, this is good. I like it. And then it was like, this is kind of weirdly like colonialist imperial. Like the white folk from like the Ark come down and like, hey, we're going to kill everybody and it's our land. We deserve it. The kind of thing. So there was some of that still goes on, but I dig it. I think it's done well. There's one character I can't stand, but I definitely enjoy it. I think it's good.
Who's the character you can't stand?
Fucking main one, Clark, dude. She drives me crazy.
Oh, the white woman? Of course you don't like the white woman. You're hilarious.
I definitely have a blonde bias. I'm sorry, blonde women out there. You're not my faves. Peck Becky's.
Honestly, you're going to get me in trouble talking about you had a blonde bias. Anyways.
Why does that get you in trouble?
I don't know. Somehow it's going to be
my
fault.
You know what's funny is I've been calling them Peck Becky's since before Becky was a
thing.
Yeah,
you've been calling them Peck Becky's for quite some time.
For a long time.
Mm-hmm. Years and years.
But that's only the blonde, like, waif, like, 92-pound, like, yeah. Like, oh, I'm just going to eat some of this bread for lunch. Ooh, I'm full. I had a walnut.
See, this is exactly why you're going to get me in trouble. Could you hear this? This is what I have to deal with on a regular basis.
Okay, so we've also been watching Search Party. Did you watch that at all?
Have you heard of it?
It's, no.
It's on TBS. Shit. You can binge it right now, and it's this, like, quirky sitcom about a group of college friends who one of their former associates in college goes missing, and they decide they're going to try and find her. It's super quirky, like Parker Posey's in it. Who's the girl? Alia Kawat from what's the blue thing? Arrested Development is in it, and then a bunch of unknowns. But the secondary characters are really funny in it, and I recommend it. I thought it was really
the
good.
Dude that plays her gay BFF best friend. Is
yeah,
fucking
so
hilarious.
Funny. Yeah, so it's. I think people will like it. I think it's funny. So it's called Search Party. It's on TBS, and I would recommend it to folks, especially if you're looking to binge something easy to watch over the holiday weekend because you're home and you don't want to listen to your uncle talk about whatever the fuck this weekend. What are you doing for the holidays, Chris?
I am going to actually spend it with some folks. Nice. Not my folks, but a friend's family, so
very nice.
Should be pretty fun.
Are there children there? Or will there be kids?
Yeah.
Nice, excellent. Hey,
and the kids, I enjoy because I'm not usually a kid person, but I'm okay with this kid.
But
this
kid's cool. That's nice.
This kid's cool. Yeah, I can only deal with the cool kids. I can't deal with everybody's kids.
Uh huh. And what if you had to give like the best mid season finale award to a show, what would you give it? Who would you give that title to?
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
That shit's been so
good. Yo, it was so dope, though.
Ugh. Yeah.
Everybody should be listening to Super Tuesday podcast on MTR Network. It's my favorite TV show podcast. It's so good. And it makes me love a show that I love so much already. It's really amazing. Somehow I like go in thinking that was so great. And then I listen to the show. I'm like, man, it was really great. Ah, it was so good.
Yeah.
It's so true. What else are you watching? What's been catching your eye? Anything that you're like super looking forward to or just saw that people may not be thinking about yet?
You know, to be honest, I'm actually happy everything's on break.
Just, so you're like, I don't have to watch everything.
Yeah, I can just like, I think we did our last podcast. Like I got a Rogue One spoiler review. I got a schedule for next week, and we're doing our 2017 movie preview. But other than that, I'm pretty much on break. This is what I consider a break for 2 weeks. So I'm kind of glad I don't have anything that I need to watch.
Mm.
And it's just, you know, there's things I need to catch up on and things like that. And, you know, when you review movies, everybody, or TV shows, everybody wants you watching everything anyway. But I'm kind of just glad to get that break. I mean, I can finally catch up on some comic books and just, you know, just relax. It's while I enjoy the shows, it's tough to watch
shows
and then review them. It's just it's work.
Do you watch them so a second time? Often?
If I'm not too busy, yes.
Mm.
So I'll usually watch them twice. Usually the first time I watch it as soon as possible, and I just want to watch it as soon as possible so I don't get so I don't get spoilers, because people will spoil shit to me just because they know that I review it, so they won't.
That's a dick
they
move.
Have no. Well, they don't mean to, but they don't know. They don't do their due diligence to see if I'm watching live or not. So if I, let's say Tuesdays I have a screener. Let's say I go and I'm at the gym and I'm going to watch it later on. People will just be like, they'll tweet me.
Oh, I see.
You know, and it's like, it's not like they do it on purpose, but it's just one of those. Damn it. So I got to watch. I try to watch it as soon as possible so I avoid any spoilers. And then the second time, if I have time, I watch it more slowly. I can pause it, can rewind. I can, you know, really absorb it. But I really feel like you kind of, this is why I don't mind, even though we call it Super Tuesday, for some of these shows, we don't review them until a couple days later. And then for Arrow and Legend of Tomorrow, we don't review them until Sunday. And it's going to be really weird with Legend of Tomorrow because that's going to be moving to Tuesday as well now. So that review is only going to come out like 2 days before the next episode airs. I don't even care. I'm like, I need that break.
Yeah, I've gotten to the point where I'm almost hate watching Arrow. I'm going to say hate watching it. I'm not liking it anymore. I just don't like it. I really don't. It's like, meh. I used to love it, and I'm just like, well, whatever.
You know what I found when something like that happens? Just take a break from it.
Yeah, maybe.
And come back and like binge or something.
Yeah, I think sometimes that happens. Like, I think that's why I don't want to add another show into what I'm watching now, because it'll, at some point, that's why I don't do Supergirl. I let Shanna and the Doctor do. I let them do Supergirl, and I binge Supergirl like 2 or 3 episodes in a row. Like, I caught up to Supergirl, and I was like 4 or 5 episodes back this season before the crossover episode. Mm-hmm. So I watched those 4 or 5 episodes. I binged them together. Now, granted, this season is much better than season 1 anyway, but it was no pressure.
Yeah,
I could watch it when I wanted to. I could catch up on them when I wanted to. And, you know, I find that sometimes that helps.
Hey, listen, I'm gonna get back into gaming. I haven't been video gaming very much, and so I've been asking folks that are professionals, what's your preferred platform, and what do you think of the Nintendo Switch that's coming out, and what are good games to play?
So I'm a bad nerd to ask about that kind of stuff. So I've heard about the Switch. We've talked about it a couple times, I think, on the Nerd Off. I'm not buying anything Nintendo. Like, I just don't trust them to do anything.
I love Nintendo. Nintendo's been my shit forever.
I think it's nostalgia. So
that's probably me.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's like, you know what you do for if you want to play Nintendo games? Get an emulator.
Listen, you know what I'm going to do, though? And I'm not going to lie. I'm straight up, I'm buying it day it comes out.
What?
Yeah. I mean,
I'm a Nintendo. I've had every platform Nintendo's ever done. I love them.
It looks like it could be good. But I don't trust.
Okay, so what Nintendo platform do you – are you an Xbox or a PlayStation? You got both. What's your favorite?
I play Xbox just because mostly all my people I play with are on Xbox.
Okay.
So that's what I do Xbox for. But, I mean, yeah, I tell people, it's like, go where your friends are. If your friends are on PlayStation, go to PlayStation. If your friends are on Xbox, go to Xbox. You know, and I'll be honest, because I'm so busy, I don't get to play as much. So my Xbox doubles as basically my entertainment system. Like, I'm watching TV through my Xbox right now. So it's like, I do everything through my Xbox. So, you know, that's what I do.
What game are you playing the most when you do play?
When I do play. It depends on what mood I'm in. Like, if I'm doing, if I want first-person shooter, like, Titanfall 2 has been really good. You know, so I've been playing that, and what I love about the Xbox now is I can get all my backwards compatible games back. So I've been trying to get back into Mass Effect, been playing that, and then Red Dead Redemption. You know, they got backwards compatibility on that, so I can play that. So that's pretty much been it.
And now with the first person shooters, are you doing that? Do they have the dual, like, you play by yourself, or you can play with other people?
Oh, I always play online with the people if I'm doing that. So yeah.
I don't know why, but I used to game a lot, and I've kind of got away from it. And I was like, you know, I'm gonna start gaming again. It's kind of nice, you know, good little meditation.
It's a good release. I mean, sometimes you just need, you know, you need that. You need something that you can just relax and do. You know. Yeah.
So that's what it is with me.
I know the Switch is going to have a Zelda game probably like right away. That'll be me.
You and your Zelda.
I love that shit. All right. I guess anything else you got, Leslie?
I think that's the last thing I had. Chris, anything you guys got going on that you wanted to share with the peoples?
Not right now. Like I said, I gotta start planning I haven't even started planning my 2017. I'm hoping that it's as good as, you know, as bad as 2016 has been for everything else. I think for the network, 2016 was really great for us. We got a lot of opportunities, and, you know, we expand the network. We have I gotta count how many shows we did this year. But and that's just the regular shows, the premium shows. We did a lot of those too. So, the premium network did really well this year too, and it's allowed us to basically, you know, the site is basically, you know, self-funded now, you know, self-sustainable. So I don't need to come out of pocket anymore for the site. So that's always good. So
that's awesome.
But just keep an eye out for us, and hopefully we'll fully transition to the MTR network. I'm trying to. I have the domain. I just haven't moved everything over because I don't want to do all that work. So maybe I'll do it the next 2 weeks or so.
Ain't that a fucking hassle moving all that shit?
Yeah, I know. I just don't want to. Yeah. So much work. I'm not going to lie. I want to spend the next 2 weeks just not doing anything.
You should. And also, I mean, you have your inauguration trip down out of the country to. Is it Aruba you're going? Or?
Yes, I am going to Aruba. That's exciting. Not be here.
That's wonderful.
I cannot wait. Yeah, that's one thing I've been trying to do more of is make sure I take vacations. Because I don't know if you saw that article that came out about how, you know, young people or millennials aren't using their vacation because they're feeling guilty about it and blah, 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 blah. I always use mine. Like, you know, I know it's a privilege to have the amount of vacation hours I get. But I would always use it. I would never use it for like trips. I would do things like use it for, you know, New York Comic Con or San Diego Comic Con or staycations. I stay at home and play video games for a week or something like that. But I wasn't doing trips. So I'm trying to get better at actually doing real trips where I actually have to pack up, leave, and go somewhere and relax, and where where I'm not doing work. Because even though I like doing the conventions, folks don't understand, there's so much work. Like, Phenom and I come back from them, and we are...
You need a vacation after it.
Yeah, we do. We are dead afterwards. Because we're lugging equipment around. We're going from interview to interview. Like, New York Comic Con was really crazy for us. We had interviews back to back to back. We got to the point where we had interviews that we couldn't make because we were still in another interview.
Wow.
Like, it was... Wow. And at one point... I think Javits is maybe what – it's 4 New York blocks, I think, from Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
At some point, Phenom had photos to do in Madison Square Garden and then had to come back to Javits. Like, it was a lot. So it's like, you know, when you're doing all that, you know, it's not really a vacation.
Yeah.
So, like, I've used my vacation time to go to these things, so I'm trying to make sure I save up at least a week or two to have to just go and do something else. You know, if it's out of the country, great. If it's in the country, that's fine too. But just a vacation, you know?
Yeah. And I would say I'm 40. I've been at the same company for many years, and we get to carry over some days. We have a very generous and I was even liberal policy. I get a lot of just, it's really good. The quality of life is wonderful. But as a goal, right? It's been the last few years, I've had enough days where, I just have like fuck it days. Like, I swear to God, like, you can just wake up and be like, you know what? Fuck it. The day is too nice. I'm going to go play frisbee golf. I'm going to play, like, a buddy of mine's like, hey, you want to go off roading? Yeah, fuck it. I'm going to call work and be like, oh, I'm done. Not today, you know? And if you have enough days where you can just be like, fuck it. And like, you got to have, that's a privilege to have a job where you get days off and you still get paid versus a person like that's in the service industry. We only get paid if you're working that day, like waiters and waitresses. Like, it's a privilege to be able to say fuck it and not work, but oh, it's nice for the quality of life, just a mental health, like, you know what, today's not gonna work.
Well, and I think that especially for mental health, right? I think that it's important for, especially in these Trump years coming up, that people, if you can, you know, yes, it's a privilege to have it, if you have it, use it.
Oh, yeah.
Don't let anybody convince you, like, there are people out there that it's yours to earn, you know. If you earn PTO, if you earn vacation days,
it's yours.
Yeah.
You know, you have to put in for your time, but don't let your boss or anybody try to convince you or guilt you into not taking those days. I mean, it's yours. And if they do that, you know, again, there's privilege in me saying this, but time to find another job. You know, it might not happen right away, but that's just not a place you can't stay at. Like, I remember when that article came out and I was saying that, and some people were like, yeah, I just, you know, they just make me feel so guilty. But I was like, listen, you might not be able to find a job right now, but you should be looking.
Yeah.
Because that's not a place you can stay. You can't stay somewhere where, I mean, with all the problems I have, I can say at least I can take off that day. Like, you know, if I'm like, fuck it, man.
Yeah,
I can take that day off.
I forced a change at the company I work at. I had a conversation with the owner, and there's a change because of that exact thing. Like, he used to have to kind of approve shit, and I'm like, that just you don't understand. Like, that doesn't, not that it doesn't work, but like, for me, if I have these days and they're mine, I can take them at any reason for whatever. It's just like a day. Like, you don't have to fucking question it. I just go to a website and click a button and you give it to me. That is something that has value to me. If I have to come like hat in hand and be like, oh, can I please have this? Like, that's just no. Like, that's not the same thing. And he actually got it. And he's like, okay, we'll do it your way. I was like, thanks. Because I was like, I don't say I refuse, but like, you know, the policy was you had to come talk to him. I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. He's like, why aren't you going to do it? Because it's terrible. That's a horrible thing. I got to come beg you for the day? No, thank you. I don't want that. He tried to go from, you have a guaranteed, like, really generous policy, like 3 weeks off, or you can have as much time as you want. You just got to come talk to me about it. And, like, I could have been like, hey, can I have the whole summer off? He's like, well, you know, maybe did you do this, maybe did that, and I don't know, are you going to be able to do this? But it was just like, no, you know, we need actual number of days, and just give me those days.
Yeah.
Don't fuck around with them, and you can't say no, and that's that.
Yeah, I get 2 floating holidays, a certain number of vacation, and a certain number of PTO, which are sick days. So I had to start one time. I had to ask them what the rule for the floating holidays were, because when I was at Booze, our floating holidays could be any day we wanted. For this one, I have to use them. They have to be attached to a holiday, so I can extend a holiday.
Got it.
I just can't use them anytime. And then PTO is sick. They call them sick days, but they're just more vacation days, because they were like, oh, yeah, you don't have to be sick. You can use them for anything you want. I'm like, oh. Oh, in that case.
Yeah, our entire vacation is PTO. It's just days, and it's either a vacation, a sick day, doesn't matter. Just take it. That's what you have, and you can roll some over and this and that. But we've been keeping you late. I don't want to keep it too long, but we're getting towards the end of the year. We have 1 or 2 more episodes before the end of the year.
Yeah, we have one more. Rod and Karen are going to be with us next week, which is super exciting. And I'm adding a special episode next week. I'm gathering the ladies who did the 2 Beyonce and Prince themed shows with us, and we're going to do a Black Girl Magic Moments countdown for 2016, because while 2016 sucked, Black women were doing some amazing shit this year. We're really excited to talk about all that, so that's going to be next week. And I think we're going to try and actually post it live on Facebook Live as we do the show. So be on
maybe if your tech support agrees.
If my tech support agrees. Yeah. I asked you yesterday and you said okay, so.
I don't want nobody fucking with me in these streets, same children.
What?
Drew. I hate that guy.
Everybody.
High five.